It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. What a panel. Stacey Higginbotham is here. Sherilyn Lowe from Engadget. And the return of Father Robert Ballesaire, the digital Jesuit. They're all just back from CES. Our CES roundup next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 701, recorded Sunday, January 13th, 2019. Safe bladder space. This Week in Tech is brought to you by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you'll get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/TWiT. And by stamps.com. Buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software, helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/TWiT. And by IT Pro TV. Start your new career in IT or level up with flexible IT training from IT Pro TV. Visit go.itpro.tv/TWiT to take advantage of their biggest sale yet. Standard memberships, just $29 a month. And for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription, use the code TWIT30 at checkout. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news, and it has been a busy week because of CES. So we have brought here CES refugees. I didn't get to go, but good news, Stacey Higginbotham did. She's covering IoT for Stacey on IoT.com, of course, a regular on This Week in Google. Hi, Stacey.
Hello, everyone. Back or should I say hola?
Hola. Back in Austin.
Yes.
We're coming your way, you know, for South By.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I might be decamping.
Don't go camping.
Okay, fine. You can have my studio.
Well, maybe we'll borrow it. Yeah, that might be nice. Also with us, and we're glad to have her, Sherilyn Lowe. She is reviews editor at Engadget. I know Engadget has a big presence at CES. How many people did you send down there?
I lost count, but I think we're about 30 to 40,
wow.
Maybe.
Wow. Do you still have your own trailer and all that stuff, or did they still do that?
We did, yeah. We had our trailer on the lot. We had our stage on the show floor in Central Hall. It's fun times.
Yeah. Great to have you, Sherilyn.
And thank you.
Look who's here for my sins. Father Robert Ballesaire, the digital Jesuit. He's been in Rome, but you get a dispensation to go to CES every year?
I got furloughed. I think it's
furloughed.
Furloughed from my job in Rome. No, that was the deal. So when we were negotiating me going over there, I said, well, I would like to continue my work in technology. If I come and accept this assignment, will you promise me I can do 4 events a year? And so this was number one.
Number one. And what are the other events?
Definitely DEF CON Black Hat. That's number two. Then maybe IFA, maybe NAB.
IFA's closer. It's in Barcelona.
Yeah, IFA's closer. Mobile World Congress, it's too close to CES.
Is IFA? No, IFA's in Berlin.
IFA's in Berlin.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to sort of save the fourth one just for
whatever. Wait, I didn't know you get to negotiate these things. I just thought they told you where to go and you go.
Normally, yes. But they've been trying to get me there for a few years. So they
had some bargaining chips.
I had a little bit of bargaining power.
He also has some gadgets.
I have gadgets.
Let's start with Engadget's list of nominees for the best of CES. Sherilyn, you were involved in this, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, the whole team actually was involved. Each editor was assigned one or two categories to kind of manage. And then we all got together around the second or the third night of the show to all talk about our nominees and why we think they're worth the nomination. And then the next night, everyone votes on which should win each category. So it's tough. It's exhaustive. We start working on this a month in advance at least, and these are our finalists. These are what we think was the best of the show.
Have you announced the winners yet?
We have, yeah. We did on Thursday evening, on the, I think, third day of the show. I lose track. But yeah, the winner, best of best, was the Impossible Burger 2.0.
Oh my God, not a tech product of any kind.
it surprised everybody, but I think it has, my personal take on it is that I like that it's a unique thing to win a Best of CES award. We've never awarded it to a non-gadget, but in addition to that, I think it has a lot of implications, not just for non-meat eaters, but just for the fact that we are, you know, it's something that can help our environment overall, right? Reduce the waste of food or eating too much meat. There's a lot of environmental positives this has. And that's something that I think as an industry, we could think to do a lot more of. So I think it's a unique choice. And I think it's a controversial choice. Let's be real. I don't think everyone on the team voted for it, but it was the most popular option. And that's how it won Best of Best.
So how was it? We should explain the Impossible Burger is a hamburger that tastes and looks like it's meat, but it's not. What is it?
It's a soy-based protein patty, right? I think the first time it came out, it was able to replicate the so-called blood that you would expect from a meat patty. And the initial Impossible Burger patty that people have tried for a while now was wheat-based. And so this year, the new one is based on soy, and it has more of a chewy texture to it that helps make it taste more like meat. I personally didn't try it because I'm like, whoa, that is not my cup of tea.
Disgusting.
I want real meat. But the people who tried it from our team thought it was really good, actually, and that it tasted a lot more like beef than the original.
Is it easier to cook?
No.
Okay, well, no, that's a big issue. So the Impossible Burger right now, your quality, if you go buy it, it's all over the map. Because right now they sell it only in restaurants.
White Castle has it.
Yeah, so I've had a really delicious Impossible Burger, and I've had a really terrible Impossible Burger. And so I was curious if this one's a little easier to cook without, like,
it's easier to cook than
much.
The wheat products, because soy is so much more flexible as a protein than any wheat product can be. But for me, the thing is, why are we doing this? I mean, you're never going to convince someone who is, I have to eat meat.
No, no, we must do this.
No. I mean, I understand.
We must do this.
No, I believe in it. I believe that a product like this is very important. I'm actually with Engadget on that. I'm just saying, why do we have to make every product like this almost meat?
No, I understand.
It's just food.
If you're a vegetarian, you should eat vegetables. But if we're going to, what we need to do is get the world off of eating meat. It's not an economical food product.
If you do it right, it's actually a really compelling meat burger-like substance.
You can do
substance.
Great stuff with soy.
The presumption is if people are going to stop eating meat, not just people who have declared themselves vegetarians, but if we can wean people off of meat, we're going to have to make something that is indistinguishable from meat that they'll be happy with.
But do we? I mean, is it just that one generation that still remembers what meat tastes like that's going to want it?
Well,
and after that, they're like, why would I want it?
Transitional burger.
To your point, I think that for someone like me who's in the middle, who could see myself switching over to this meatless substitute someday, getting it as close to real meat as possible is key, because the reason I don't switch over to being a full vegetarian is because of the taste of a lot of things, and I've been able to integrate more vegetables into my diet because some of them have been prepared so well. So I think the audience isn't the one that's fully vegetarian or the one that's firmly into their barbecue that wants to eat meat their whole lives. You're talking about the segment that's maybe open to it and could switch over, and that's a huge segment too.
I've effectively switched over to being vegetarian because all we have in Italy is pasta.
Spaghetti.
Seriously, it's everything.
Do they give you meat sauce?
No, it's just pasta. It's pasta with beans or pasta with rice or pasta with pasta. It's like living at Olive Garden.
Oh, well.
It was an Olive Garden pastas. With some nice paintings
you
on the ceiling.
Exactly.
There you go. Some gilded paintings.
Yeah.
If you think about the cost differential, so if you can get Impossible Burgers to be eventually cheaper than meat, right? Because we're trying to promote people eating it, or maybe it becomes cheaper as the cost of meat rises to reflect its environmental costs, then you might have something where you're like, oh, a meat burger is a special occasion, and the rest of the time you have this. And it's nice to have that as an option that's still familiar.
Yeah, I mean, the Beef Council will tell you, oh, no, you know, it's a myth that beef takes 4,000 gallons of water per pound and stuff like that.
Oh, my gosh. I live in Texas. The Beef Council's right outside my door.
But it's
there's a cow grazing on my lawn.
The simple fact of it is eating lower on the food chain is healthier because you're not concentrating toxins. It's better for the environment because it takes less energy, less water, less of everything to make. So it's healthier for you. It's better for the environment. But the problem is meat is seen as something you can eat because you're affluent.
Well,
and I think that really we have, in order to save the planet, among the many things we have to do, we have to stop eating meat.
There's a missing element here, though. Yes, meat is energy intensive, but the main energy costs, and I'm talking now in general, it's the logistical chain. It's the fact that nothing is sourced locally. So for me to have that burger, it's not just that, yes, that cow had to be raised and grazed and processed, but now it was probably transported a couple of thousand miles, processed at three or four different locations before it got to my Big Mac box.
So that's another problem.
Right. And that's the same problem if it's meat or soy.
Stacy just goes at our door, kills a cow, brings it in, and she's at dinner.
I'm done.
We have a lot of cows here, too. Yeah. And that is the other side of it. People say eat local, right, as much as you can. Eat sustainably and eat local. I think that this, it's an interesting thing. The other reason there's the Impossible Burger exists, it's going to be a moneymaker, right?
Exactly.
I think 5 years ago to make, I remember Sergey Brin eating the first fake hamburger. It was a $6,000 hamburger.
But it was really good.
But the investment is to bring the price down and make it more palatable, more acceptable, but also easier to distribute, easier to cook. And I think a lot of investors, Elon Musk's brother is big on this, think that the next wave of big unicorns is going to be food companies.
Well, specifically, he likes growing inside of cities, right?
Yeah, farming.
Yeah, that was his thing.
Square roots.
And they love this idea of taking old shipping containers and outfitting them with high-density grow capacity, dropping them into the middle of an urban area and say, that's your food source.
So that's actually difficult. So super, the problem it's also, those are so expensive right now. You can only grow high-value crops, and you can also only grow certain types of crops that don't grow vertically.
Precisely.
That do grow vertically. So you can grow lettuces, but you can't grow things like, I don't think you can grow strawberries. You can't grow wheat products or grasses or grains yet.
Or soy. You can't do soy.
Can you do beets?
Beets? I mean, no, because
good. Think so.
You good. Need That's something that grows straight.
As long as you can't do beets, I'm all for it.
Right.
Beets are delicious. Hey, beets contribute to the heme that's part of
beets are very good for
the Impossible Burger?
That's right.
No.
The heme it's disgusting even to talk about it, but it's the blood product that they use to simulate the juicy.
See, okay,
blood
that's
in
the
burger.
Part of it that I'm like, wait, why do
why
that?
Do you need to
don't
do, that?
Do it.
Because we're all vampires.
Because when you look at a picture of a burger,
juice.
I mean, imagine if it were well done. You'd be like,
too dry, right? So, Sherilyn, I am proud of Engadget and proud of you for choosing as the best of CES a fake meat product. I mean, that's pretty awesome. That's bold.
It at least sparked a lively conversation here on the show, didn't it, huh?
Now, my question is that because all the other stuff was crap?
I don't think it was crap. I think it was hard to choose.
It was all so good.
I wouldn't say it was all good.
I say this every year, and you guys can shout me down. And maybe it's just me justifying the fact that I don't go to CES anymore. It looked like there wasn't a lot of interesting stuff at CES.
I think year after year, we're running into the issue of so much news is coming out of CES. It's very hard for anything to break through the noise. And so it sounds like it's all noise. But, you know, when something breaks through, like, you know, rollable TV finally shipping to the public.
But that's a perfect example. And you gave that your best TV product. This is the LG rollable TV. Devendra loved it. But we saw it last year, right? So.
Right.
The only news here is they think maybe they'll be able to get it out by the end of the year.
No. The news was that LG at their booth had the melted display rolling cave thing of screens.
To me, this is what's wrong with CES. That's not innovative. We had it a year ago.
Yeah.
Same thing with the luggage that follows you around the airport. How many times are we going to see that before it?
It depends on where you spend your CES. If you spent all your time at LVCC, I absolutely agree with you because it's the same vendors, just revving the same products that you saw the last year. Go to the Sands. Spend at least a day. I spent 3 days at the Sands.
And
down in the Rieker Park because there's weird stuff that maybe the first time you pass by, you'll laugh at it and you go, that could be a product category.
I was thinking about the Sands. I was surprised at how much, not necessarily sleep tech, but how many eye masks trained. I could not believe how many of those there were.
What kind of eye masks? Like Lisa has some that have eyelashes on them, like that?
No. Like that have also, like light pulses that train you to be like either less exhausted or jet lag or like they do a lot.
My favorite was the one that shot lasers into your eyelids. I think this is for treatment of
seasonal affect disorder.
It's supposed to help you sleep better. It's supposed to reset your clock. I mean, you pick your eye mask.
Yeah. This is what I knew would happen when they started talking about blue light from screens. And it was inevitable that we go down that rabbit hole.
So we would counteract it with a different gadget.
Yeah. Oh, a blue light a problem. Well, how about some red light in your eyeballs?
I want to say that I think, I was looking at the Engadget stuff. I actually loved all of the things that y'all picked as your unexpected products were actually the ones that I thought were the most fun of CES. Oh, so I was kind of excited to see that.
Oh, good.
I'm actually wearing one of them right now.
This is one of
Engadget's. Are you wearing the bladder thing?
I am.
Wait a minute.
She called it.
How did you know? And how did you? Why? Okay.
So, Carson, if you go overhead right now, y'all, the Twit audience can see that currently my bladder is 30% full.
There's an app for that.
There's an app for that. It's a small ultrasonic transducer that's currently sitting on my abdomen, and it's actually measuring the fullness of my bladder, and it does it in real time.
So you have to wear a belt.
No, it's actually just taped. It's medical taped to my abdomen. Now, they came up with, this is a company called D-Free, which stands for diaper free. And they originally created this technology for like nursing homes and hospitals where the only other alternative are diapers or catheters.
So there are people, particularly of a certain age, which I'm rapidly getting to, who can't tell need to go.
You lose that ability.
So they have to wear diapers because they just can't control it. So it's not merely incontinence. They have no sense of that they have to go. So this would help them. It gives you a notification.
Like I have mine set so that when it hits 9, I should actually lower it to 7 or so.
Oh my gosh. Okay, go on.
I'm sorry. No. So yeah, when it hits a certain threshold, it'll ping your phone and say, hey, your bladder's filling up.
How accurate is this?
It's super accurate.
So put this on children when they're being potty trained. That would be?
Exactly. Like,
when you're sitting there and like 3 years old and they're like, I have to go. And you're like, can you wait for 5 minutes? They're like, no.
This is not good because you're going to train children that they don't know when it's time to pee unless they have a smartphone and a belt.
I'm telling you, as a parent who tried to leave the house during the year that it wasn't that long.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
There'll be accidents.
This is what I call, this is second wave health tech. So first wave health tech was important because it got us into this idea that we can wear things.
Things like the Fitbit.
The Fitbit or the Apple Watch. It's cool, but it's information looking for a problem to solve. This started as a problem to solve. Then they figured out what information do we need to solve it and how do we get that information. And they came up with a product that's actually pretty good. I mean, again, the first time I saw the PR pitch for this, I disregarded it because it sounded silly. I didn't want anything to do with incontinence tech.
He's wearing one.
I'm wearing one.
And this was a best of CES in the digital health and fitness category.
Yeah.
The triple WD free. Is it available for sale now?
It is.
It's the only caveat with everything we're going to talk about is a lot of the stuff you see at CES is not available now. In fact, some of it will never be available.
Yeah. Yeah,
unfortunately.
Especially with the Sands area that you're talking about, Father Robert. But you are right that the most interesting stuff is out there. The D-Free itself, I think they're not pitching it for kids, unfortunately, Stacey. Yeah. But really, I think it has a lot for caregivers, nurses, like you guys have mentioned already. And, it also fell under, at least on the short list of our most impactful, most unexpected categories. It might not have made the final list of nominees, but we definitely talked a lot about it. It's fun, to see what the entire team has looked at the whole show. And things that we go into the show expecting to be complete crap actually end up being surprisingly thoughtful and useful.
Yeah.
It's still then it comes and becomes really hard to pick one because then we all start fighting in the trailer. Honestly, there's like every year there's a big fight and we all brace ourselves for it. But everyone has their own opinion on what's going to be the most impactful. So I think Samsung's, robo brace thing that can help people walk was the final winner.
This is what I thought Father Robert would be wearing in the studio. This is the gait enhancing motivational system. Or
and my
GEMS.
Gait's just fine. Thank you very much.
Now, this is a concept, though. This is not a product yet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also harder. Well, one of the criteria we look at too is also like market appeal and whether or not it's realistically going to come to the market. There's a lot of criteria we have to consider. So people fight over also which one's the more important criteria. And I think that because this is Samsung and because of the potential to help people here, this has a slight edge over the others, because if Samsung really wants to make this happen and maybe is focused on a niche market like hospitals for a while, they could easily do it. Whereas for a startup that may have brought this same thing as a concept to CES, then is less likely to us to become a reality unless they find a buyer at CES itself. Right. So there's just a lot of things that go into our discussions. I won't bore you with all of it, but this is our Liz. I'm quite proud of it. Take a look. There's so much.
I think it's interesting that so much accessibility and health tech is in here. That's clearly the focus. Is that one of the trends you saw at CES?
I think every year in the past 2 years, we've seen that increase. Accessibility tech is a new product category for the Best of Awards, if I'm not wrong. If not last year, then this year. And in the digital health category, there's a lot of overlap with wearables. And so because I was overseeing the wearables category this year, I made a conscious effort to kind of leave out anything that is too just on the nose as wearable. You know, there are a couple of smartwatches that were also announced at CES, but as a team and me and my other editors, we decided that the more impactful, the more meaningful stuff should get more recognition. So maybe from our list, it does look like there's a lot of digital health stuff that comes up, because I think to us that just seemed like the more important
tech
that we wanted to focus on.
Well, and I think also now that we baby boomers are aging, there's a big market for stuff like that.
Well, there's also the FDA changed their rules last year to make it easier to get approval for things and then to update and handle software updates in a way that doesn't feel scary to vendors.
Okay. Okay.
So
it's a little gray, though, the FDA thing, because it's still a little unclear Stacey, go ahead.
It is still, I was like, it is still unclear, but they did make, what they did do is they made clear that you can release a product and update the software without it kind of needing new approvals. They also established a cybersecurity program that's really interesting and kind of provided some real guidance about what they're looking for in products, whereas before they were like, make it secure, you guys.
Well,
so now they...
As an example, the ECG, the electrocardiogram in the Apple Watch wouldn't be available if it weren't for a new category of FDA products, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's say you don't have to have, what, proof that they're safe and effective? I don't know. What don't you have to have? It's more experimental stuff.
Don't make me remember. It's like 6 months ago. I'm like, what are the words?
Don't make me remember, says Stacey.
Well, it's things like this. You know,
these are hearing aids.
Mike in the chat room, yeah.
In the FDA funding bill from 2017, one of the things, and by the way, kudos to Elizabeth Warren, who did a nonpartisan effort and did not make a big deal about this to get this into the funding bill, was a requirement that the FDA allow over-the-counter hearing aids by 2020. They have to have a request for comment, and then there's a comment period, August 2020. But at some point, you'll be able to buy hearing aids over the counter. And as somebody who uses hearing aids, that's a huge deal. Hearing aids, you go to an audiologist, which I think you should still do. But anyway, you go to an audiologist, you get tested, you get the hearing aids. My instruments from Starkey cost $6,000. And in often case, people don't have insurance to pay for that.
Right.
So that's prohibitively expensive. So the idea that maybe there's a market of hearables, over-the-counter hearables that you don't go to a professional, you do a software test, you do a phone test. My Samsung Galaxy phones have actually a pretty good hearing test built in, and that gives you a curve. Then when you listen to your music on your Samsung, it sounds better. That's really good. It's probably better than the hearing aid test I got. So, Robert, you brought something from a company called
Eargo.
So E-A-R-G-O.
Right. These are their top of the line. They just launched them at CES. They're completely in ear, so you don't actually see these. It's not one of those hearing aids.
Can I put one in my ear?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
well, I mean, they last for 20 hours on a charge. And
they're rechargeables.
They're rechargeables. They don't use those coin batteries. The case is actually the charger and a battery, so it will give you additional runtime.
Can you tell I have a hearing aid in?
I mean, I can see your IFB. That's
not
this,
really.
There's this, but there's something in my ear.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's working.
It is working, and you can configure it via your phone. I mean, that's
these
the kind of tech that people
un-configured
expect.
Configured at this point, but they're actually doing a pretty good
this
job.
This is straight out of the box.
Yeah. So are they, how do they configure them? Because like New Hera does a kind of like, I think it's IR beams that they shoot at your ear and they're trying to figure out what sounds best for you.
I think it's good.
They still suggest you go to an audiologist.
When I go to an audiologist, they do that thing that you did in grade school. You put, maybe they don't do it anymore in grade school, but they did it when I was a kid. You put on headphones and they play a tone and you raise your hand when you hear the tone. Do they still do that?
Oh, I did.
You could tap a screen on your phone.
Now, well, that's what I did with this. Believe it or not, that's exactly what you do with the Samsung.
Right.
And it works the same way, and it gives me great results. So my audiologist still put me in a booth. They put headphones on. They still run a test on you. And then they get a curve, your hearing sensitivity, and they know what to boost and what not. And most hearing aids these days are connected digitally to a computer where they set the curve in the hearing aid, and they put it on you. I imagine these work similarly, except that you do the test yourself, self-administered.
The app on the phone is actually, it's really, really well done. So, I mean,
Much are these, though?
The low end is $1,400. The high end is $2,500.
So they're still really expensive.
They're still really expensive. Less expensive than the non-over-the-counter.
Even if you go to Costco, they're half what a Costco here.
Right, exactly.
So did you see the Starkey Livio, I think is what they were?
Didn't.
The Livio? So those were interesting because those are... Now, these are not hearing aids, but these do track, I believe it's heart rate. They do in English translation. They have a virtual assistant. So I thought it was interesting because I associate Starkey with hearing aids and some other things.
They do make hearing aids with Livio built in. So Livio is a technology, and you can get it with or without a hearing aid. Oh, I'd be very interested in this.
So the new ones, so current Livio users, if you have it, will get an update in the spring of this year.
Oh, interesting.
So they will start testing some really cool. I mean, I thought those were really interesting. So because you can be like, oh, hey, what's the weather today? And it'll tell you. Or you can say, how many steps did I take?
If you're one of the traditional hearing aid companies like Starkey or Resound or Oticon, you're looking at a future that's going to be very different. Mm-hmm. And you probably do want to be proactive. And it's interesting because when something's in your ear, it has access to the same kind of stuff that a Fitbit might have plus, right? So there's real opportunities for – I think hearables are going to be a very big category.
I'm writing a column about that now.
Yeah. I mean, because you could put Echo in it or Google Assistant. Translation, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. That's the Babel fish, right?
You can get galvanic skin response. You can get excellent heart rate. So you can get both EKG and ECG, so brainwaves and heart rate. Often they're like high
blood oxygen levels.
Yeah, my Jabra Elites Sports say that they can do VOC, your oxygen consumption.
I learned how our Jabras work at CES. I talked to the NXP engineer, and I was blown away by – he was like, you know why those sound really good? And I was like, they do sound really good. Why? And he's like, there's four mics. They do the DSP processing to figure out, like, if there's wind blowing from one direction.
Wow.
They figure out the least amount of kind of, I guess, noise in the signal-to-noise ratio on all of the four mics, and then that's the one they use.
And that's for when you're using it as a Bluetooth headset to talk to your phone.
Yes, but that's happening on a battery-powered device.
I know.
It's this big.
That's kind of amazing.
You know, that's actually one of the trends I liked from this CES versus the last two. Last year, everything was AI-enabled. The year before that, everything was voice assistant-enabled. This year, they had that, but no one was really pushing the trend, which I enjoy.
So I'd heard that Google particularly had a big presence there. The Google Assistant was everywhere. Right, and as Amazon Echo was, right? A lot of Echo-enabled. How many Echo-enabled devices were announced?
All of
hundreds.
Them.
Yeah. but I think what you're saying is not that they're not there, but they're more integrated into
them. Right. You just assume it's going to be there. It's not like, oh, you have to look at this now because it's AI-enabled or it's AI voice-enabled. That's table stakes now. Right. And so you have to do something else, and you actually have to show me that you're doing something interesting with that technology. Otherwise, I'm not going to stop.
We saw a lot of cars with Echo.
Oh, don't get me started on the cars.
Yeah. Well, let's stop, and then we'll get you started on the cars. And how, by the way, do you need to pee? Check your phone.
Yeah, I think I'm 40%. So, I'm going up.
We've been plying him with liquor just, you know, to see what happens. Hey, this is fun. Robert Ballester is back in studio with us. He got a break from his assignment at the Vatican. He's the digital Jesuit at Jesuit.org. Do you get, like, is your rank higher now? Are you now Sergeant Father Robert Ballester?
No, I'm the low man on the totem pole. Okay. I'm the brand newest
guy
in the house.
No fancy hats or anything?
I do have a fancy hat. I don't ever wear it.
What color is your fancy hat?
It's black.
Oh, you don't have a red one yet.
No, I'm never having a red one. Never.
Just checking.
Never.
Just checking. I feel like, you know, you deserve a mitre.
I can get you one of the red hats if you'd like. I know where they keep them.
Is it legal for, I know it would be illegal for you to wear one, but what about me, a civilian? Can I wear one?
Our jurisdiction doesn't go over you, so you can wear all the hats at the same time if you'd like. We could replace all the twit caps.
So next time you're in the hat closet, anything interesting.
Instead of a fez.
Instead of a fez. I think we should have miters.
A twit miter.
The twit miter.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Sherilyn Lowe is also here, reviews editor at Engadget. She's probably exhausted. When did you get back?
Two nights ago or one night ago, something like that.
Have you had a chance to catch up on your sleep?
A little bit. I won't go into too much detail, but the first night I was back, it felt like there was a fire in my building. So there was smoke in my apartment, and I didn't get to sleep the whole night.
Holy cow.
But
that's the first time I ever heard anybody saying, let me go back to CES.
Yeah, to get away from the fire. No, yeah. I've still been working over the weekend, so
yikes.
Not yet all done with CES, no.
Thank you for letting us take a little of your time this evening.
Yeah, of course.
Appreciate it. And, of course, Stacy, who is working hard. You did a bunch of Stacy on IoT posts from CES, and I bet you have a few more to do.
I do, and I just finished up. Tomorrow we'll release the CES edition of the podcast, so that was what I was doing today.
Ooh. Look at that tractor.
Dude, isn't it awesome?
Is that, what is it?
It's a John Deere.
It's a combine.
I tried to take a picture of it, but unfortunately I didn't have the licensing for it, so I couldn't post it.
This, you know, I talked to somebody who listens to the podcast, Twit podcasts, in his combine. He says it's basically a living room. The thing drives itself. I just am sitting there in case something, you know, somebody needs to do something.
We could talk about that because I rode in one of the tractors, not the combine, just one of the normal tractors. So, and it's quite swank in there, although I was not aware of how much farmers do while they're also driving. So I was pretty impressed.
Well, fortunately, you know, they listen to the podcast.
You know what you need if you're going to drive one of those?
What?
You need an ultrasonic transducer on your bladder so you know if,
oh,
if
true.
You're getting full up. It's
when you need a bathroom, right?
Depends if right. You're raising organic or inorganic that's, vegetables, yeah. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Our show today, brought to you by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality. A brand new site awaits you at WordPress. Whether you're kind of tired of the old place, I just saw that one of the other big web hosting companies, I won't name names, but I think you probably know who it is, has been injecting JavaScript into everybody's pages. It's, you know, WordPress is the place to go to make your website. WordPress powers 33% of the internet. One third of the internet runs on WordPress. Matt Mullenweg, when he created WordPress, I jumped on the WordPress bandwagon. I've been using WordPress now for 12 years. It is the best. And now you can build a website that looks like what you want it to be, you know, something that reflects you, not some cookie cutter site, because they have thousands of templates, powerful site building tools. You don't need to be a geek. You just need to want to say something, whether it's a personal blog or you've got a business. Maybe you want to sell something online. WordPress lets you pursue whatever it is you love by launching a site free to start with room to grow. WordPress.com. was created for you. It was created so you can put your ideas on the web, and you own them. By the way, you own them. You're not working on Mark Zuckerberg's farm. You're not working on YouTube's farm. They own your content. With WordPress.com, you own it. You upload your videos, audio, text, pictures. I just love WordPress for that reason. And at any time, you can download it too because it's yours. WordPress.com was also built to grow with you, to get you where you want to be tomorrow. No 2-week trials, no hidden fees. You own your content forever. They have a great customer support team made of actual WordPress experts, not somebody looking at a notebook, but somebody who really knows their stuff, standing by to help you 24 hours a day, including weekends. And man, is it a flexible platform. It's so, some of the biggest publishing companies in the world use WordPress.com. Go to WordPress.com/twit. You can get 15% off any new plan purchase. WordPress.com/twit. It's where LeoLaporte.com is. Almost everybody I know has a WordPress site. You ought to, too. WordPress.com/twit. And man, at 15% off, that's a great way to start. WordPress.com/twit. It's only $500,000, this combine. I need somewhere to park it, though.
Ooh, you need several someplace. Actually, what was fun is I talked to them.
You park it anywhere you want.
Up front. Go ahead.
They said, they had to get that to the show floor. They said they had to make sure they were on the first floor for their booth. They had to be the first in, and they had to measure the doors to make sure that, it would fit through.
They'll be the last out.
They are, yeah.
Actually, they could use them to clean up the leftover booth material.
Yeah, they're...
Turn it into corn.
You know, there is a maximum load you can place on those floors. I've set up shows LVCC before. I didn't think you could actually bring that in there.
So apparently my cab driver, not this time I was in Vegas, but a prior time, they told me that they do a building equipment show where they actually bring in cranes and all that, those dump trucks for mining.
Wow.
So it's a show dedicated to that. And he said that is the worst for traffic because they have to close off certain streets to move those things through the convention center.
So who won CES, Amazon or Google? That's a CNET story. What do you think, Sherilyn? Did you weigh in on this?
Oh boy. I have a personal bias, so I'm going to say Google. I think that Assistant made a bigger splash this year with Google's booth, with Google's announcements. There was a ton of it. I was briefed on some of it, so I think I'm more familiar with the news than I am with the Amazon news, and that might be why I was slightly more biased.
Did you go on the Google ride?
I did not have any time.
So Google, this is what you do if you have unlimited money.
It's a small world. They recreated It's a Small World.
But instead of It's a Small World, after all, they had different things you could do with Assistant.
Right.
Right.
Did
it
you
was
go
the
on
story
it?
Of
I did not. I was going to, and then I saw the line and said no.
Did you go, Stacey?
No, Kevin went. But it's the story of getting a cake for grandma's birthday.
Yeah.
And then at the end, there's an animatronic grandma that reacts to you and actually uses NLP to talk to you and react with you, which was kind of neat.
Fortunately, Google has posted...
Google, take me on the Google Assistant ride.
A 360-degree video of the ride. Oh, so even if you weren't at CES, you can go on the ride... If bandwidth permitting.
The cheese.
I only have a gigabit.
The cheese hurts.
The cheese.
So cheese. You know, it also depended on where you spent most of your CES. If you spent it at the Sands, Amazon was more prevalent. If you spent it at LVCC, Google was more prevalent.
Oh, that's interesting. So
I will say.
Yeah, you could turn down this horrible music.
You can't put out a product without having Madam A, as we like to call her, integrated into it.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, I talked to a lot of people. They launched with Madam A and Google was coming in a quarter or two. And so if you think about biggest marketing splash, biggest presence from that perspective, Google won. But if you just think about hey, we've conquered this world and Google's trying to come in and take it over.
Well, that's a good point. It's kind of a catch-up play on Google's part.
Oh, it's totally.
I think still though that the Google Assistant is getting a lot smarter than Alexa is. I would say that can already do a lot of things, and it started out as a much more capable assistant. But with the announcements at the show and all of the stuff that Google has been doing to make Assistant much more intelligent, that we're going to see Assistant become much more useful in our lives. At the show, they announced the ability to check into your flight via Google Assistant, either on your phone or wherever you're able to use Google Assistant. I think that's a game changer for someone like me who travels a lot. And then over the course of the past year, we've seen Google Duplex, we've seen Google Screen Calls, we've seen Google's Night site software do very well. Granted, the last one has nothing to do with Assistant, but Google's research into its artificial intelligence has a lot of implications for the year going ahead. I mean, that's where I believe it's going to be. I haven't seen a make leaps as much as Google has in the past year. I will say I agree that, like, again, Google is playing a sort of catch up here, but it is trying hard and it is seeming to be successful.
So I'm going to debate a little bit with you because, and I'll do this because I actually swapped out about a month ago my Google Home for my Amazon Echo, or sorry, vice versa. And I found, and I did a post on it on the site a little while ago, but Google is super smart and it has all these amazing features, but when it comes time to execute them, it sucks and it falls down. So while I was at CES, my family took the Google Smart Display and replaced it with the Echo Show because they were sick of not being able to turn on the TV. And it was a function of Amazon is doing, and the problem is Amazon is not as good at doing really cool, fancy things. But they are really good at, you bring a device in, it automatically connects. So they've been putting a lot of their attention on the blocking and tackling at the lower level. Google has been doing things like checking in on your flight, which is totally cool. It does things like, hey, when I say, it does voice recognition really well. But it took us like an hour and a half to set up voice recognition for my daughter. And we had to do, I think I complained about this on Twig. So we had to figure that out. And it still doesn't work all the time. And that's frustrating. And then when you get to like the Google G Suite split, that is also frustrating.
I'm with both of you. I prefer the Google Suite. I can do more with the Google Suite. But
sure,
what assistant did I deploy at my parents' house in Henderson, Nevada? It absolutely was Amazon. Because I don't want to do troubleshooting for them every other day.
At home, I have a Google Home Max, and on top of that, an Amazon Echo Show, and on top of that, the Harman Kardon Cortana.
It's a modern
device.
Totem pole.
Oh God, why?
Well, yeah. You know.
When do you talk? How often do you talk to Cortana?
Why
curious.
Do you need Cortana?
That's an interesting question.
Can you ask to do something?
We're talking about Echo and Google. But nobody's talking about Bixby or Siri or Cortana.
Oh, no, Bixby is the best.
Is it over for
Bixby
them?
Is the future.
No, what are you, insane?
No, I don't know why that wasn't killed off so long ago.
It really is a Amazon versus Google
battle
at this point, right?
I think Amazon, to you guys' point, has the upper hand definitely in the smart home because it was able to integrate with so many other third-party devices early on. Google has a lot to catch up on that front. And Google's assistant is better on a smartphone because they have a smartphone. They have a smartphone ecosystem and Amazon doesn't.
That was a kind of funny bit of one-upmanship when Amazon said, we are now on 100 million devices. The next day, Google says, yeah, well, we're on 1 billion devices. So, but of course, that's mostly phones. That's not, you know, that's right. Why.
That was supposed to come out earlier, that piece of news, by the way.
Oh, really?
Just behind the scenes, yeah. Oh,
why didn't it come out earlier?
I have no idea, but they changed the date.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They know they're in a battle. Let me ask you, though. This is kind of an alternate universe here at CES you're going through when you're riding that Google ride and everybody's happy. Because outside of CES, aren't people concerned about privacy and what Google and Amazon are doing with all the data they're collecting? I'm not talking about the tin hat folks who say, oh, my God, I don't want Jeff Bezos listening to all my conversations. But there is, I think, a legitimate concern that these companies have become giant data gathering operations. And are people not concerned about that?
Is there a concern? Yes. Do these people care? No.
No.
They're really, I mean.
And did anybody bring it up at CES at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a couple companies talking about how, like, they do everything locally. So there were a couple companies there doing that. I think there were, like, maybe some government panels that focused on privacy. But no, in general.
Apple had that sign on the Marriott, bad choice of hotel, but they had that sign on the Marriott that says what happens on your iPhone stays in your iPhone. That was Apple's little nudge.
You know, my favorite statement on privacy was at CES. If you went to the Sands, the second floor, as you came in from the press room, there was a booth for Origin DNA, which is sort of like 23andMe. They want to be 23andMe. And they were offering a free DNA test for anyone who wanted it.
Yeah.
And the lines queued up around the hall.
Oh, nobody has any.
I actually lined up. I read the policy. No language in there whatsoever saying that they will not sell or share your data.
Right.
So it's like, just give us your name, your email address, your phone number, and the most personal sensitive information you can ever give anybody.
Forget your fingerprint or your iris scan. That's your DNA.
And people were signing up for it. I'm thinking, what is wrong with
Isn't
people?
Isn't that interesting?
They don't know. And you don't think about it. Wait a minute.
Is it that they don't know or they don't care?
Yes. No, I think it's that they don't make that correlation yet. Yeah. So think about all the times we've even talked about it on the show, like what artist picture would you, what fine art would you be? You know, take your picture with Google and give it to, or
yeah.
Microsoft had something. So all of that was using, I mean, that was taking your facial data and using it for their AI algorithms. And people who complain on one hand about privacy and do that on the other hand, I'm kind of like, but they just don't know. They don't think about that.
Yeah, the government no longer needs to invade my privacy to get that data. They can just buy it from Facebook or 23andMe.
If you live in certain states, it's already in there, and you know it's part of your driver's license.
I did a triangulation on Friday with Shoshana Zuboff, who has been working for 5 years on a big book. I think a very powerful book called Surveillance Capitalism. I recommend the interview. It was the last triangulation. And I really recommend the book. And I don't know what I think about this, but her contention is we've actually hit an inflection point where, you know, initially I think we all were kind of aware of what we were trading. Okay, I'll use Gmail and I'll get ads. And maybe they'll look at what I'm talking about and I'll get targeted ads. Or maybe Google will look at my searches and I'll get targeted ads. And most people said, well, I can live with that.
That's acceptable.
That's acceptable. In fact, in my opinion, a targeted ad is better than a general ad because at least it's probably something I'm interested in. But then it went from that to, and it's going from that to predicting your behavior. And then it's going from that to influencing your behavior.
Manipulating is the best ad you can ever have.
And this is her real concern. And Facebook has acknowledged that they've done this. They've even done experiments, what they called contagion experiments, where they put things in the news feed to see if it changes people's emotions. You know, and they were able to say with a strong certainty that, yeah, we can make you feel good or bad. We got that. We have the technology. That was 2 years ago. So she's very concerned that we're going to enter a world where we no longer have sovereign choice over our lives, where we are constantly manipulated by these big data companies. And she particularly name checks Google and Facebook and Microsoft. She's less worried about Apple. And she says this is, an opportunity for Apple to say, let's be the company where your privacy is protected. I fear that the minute Apple's revenues go down, Apple will suddenly say, oh, wait a minute, we do have some data here.
You know all those stories we get from press people who are freaked out every once in a while when they think their device is listening to them because it brings up an advertiser.
And I try to discourage that point.
Yeah, but they don't even have to do that. It's just the predictive algorithm. Yeah. They're looking at the things that you looked at in the past, and they were able to successfully predict what it is that you were actually looking for.
Yeah.
That's how far that technology has gone. And yes, it is a little creepy, but to someone who's not paying attention to that, it's more like, wow, this is great. It tells me exactly what I need. Well, I guess the next ad will be exactly what I need. I should go buy it. And I know that's simplistic, but that actually works. That's why people are willing to pay big money for this.
And I think it's creepy because it's trying to get you to sell something. So right. I think it's awesome when someone knows me well enough to give me like an amazing gift that they know I will like, right? That is like the height of like awesome friendship or romantic love or whatever. You know, they know you. When it's a company that's really only interested in selling you something, though, then it's just like, ew.
So there wasn't a lot of conversation about the moral implications or the political implications of what's going on. It's a small world. Get in, ride.
Oh my gosh. Google should do a gift giving service. It's kind of like Amazon's little Birchbox thing.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm suddenly like, wait a second.
You go on the ride and you get a box filled with the identifying information of someone else. That would be awesome. Just randomize it.
I have to, you know, I'm reading Zuboff's book and I talked a lot with her and I have a lot of thoughts, but I'm not really sure where I come down on this one. I certainly don't want to live in a world where we've lost all agency because big tech companies basically can get us to anything they want,
right.
Where democracy is dead, where we live in, you know, a technocratic authoritarian rule. But she says our problem with this is there's no precedent for it. So, we can't – it's not like Nazism. It's not something we've seen before. So we can't react to it any better than – the Aztecs could when Cortez came ashore. They thought he was a god. They didn't know what, You know, is he going to, what, him and these guys are going to take over? Nah, never happened. So, because there was no precedent for it. So,
there's
I think it's
line.
an interesting point. It's certainly something we should be aware of. And the problem I have, I think, sometimes with stuff we do and in general is that we're kind of acting as shills for these guys to some degree.
There is a bright line differentiator here that we can look at. I am fine with sharing the information about myself that might change as my preferences change. You want to look at my surfing habits? Okay, I'm willing to make that trade-off for the services that you offer. However, when you start having tech companies that take data that never changes, like my DNA, then there's too much of an imbalance.
Well, and once I should have brought you up because you fuzz your presence on the net.
Yeah.
You're constantly putting disinformation
out
there.
Which is why my ads look crazy.
Yeah.
I get ads for restaurants in Portland.
But I wonder if we can successfully fuzz stuff because you still, at some point,
it breaks through.
AI is going to break through.
Correct.
So anyway, I don't want to be a downer. Let's talk some about these the Lenovo Smart Clock. The best connected home product. How about that? This is a Google assistant clock, right?
I think that ties very neatly, actually, into what we were talking about privacy. To your point, Leo, I think that the companies like you are still figuring out the best way around this. And at some level right now, they seem to be sort of acknowledging it, but not really rolling out full-fledged plans to deal with this. So with the Lenovo Smart Clock, it's very similar to the Google Home Hub. And Google's take on privacy here is that, hey, we understand your concern. We're not going to build cameras into these things.
I love it that the Home Hub doesn't have a camera. I think that's great.
Exactly. So compared to the Facebook portal, which we shan't even talk about, and the Amazon Echo Show, right? These things have cameras built into them. Google's little piece of privacy play is to be like, hey, we don't have a camera into this on these things, and you can have this hard switch for your microphone.
But do they need a camera when they have the phone in my pocket?
Right. Wait, in Google, in the Google small devices, but the Lenovo and the JBL smart displays
do have
cameras.
Yeah.
So it's important
to... The Google Home Hub doesn't, and the Google Smart Clock doesn't. These two devices don't.
I have an Amazon Spot Clock, which has a camera in it. So Lisa won't let me put it where it belongs, which is on my bedside table.
Nothing goes into my bedroom that has a camera or a mic.
Well, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not even my phone. My phone does not go into my bedroom. Which I know, that's like, wait, what?
Maybe you want to think about this Lenovo Smart Clock then, Leo, because it is a clock that doesn't have a camera.
I use my Google Home as a clock all the time. I'm in bed and I go, what time is it? Hey, what time is it? And then I'll say, set an alarm.
And then it turns on
nine.
All the lights because that's what I thought it heard.
Literally every morning, I don't ask Lisa what time it is. I ask my Google Assistant what time it is. So
it's
maybe.
For the bed.
It's a nice thing to have.
I have one of those old red LED panel clocks right next to my bed.
I don't want any. I don't want
lights.
It was
so hard to find that. Even in Rome, everything is connected to everything else. I had to go down into the basement and dig through stuff.
What do you mean everything's connected to everything else?
All the new gear that we get, it's all smart.
Oh, even in Rome?
Even in Rome.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, the smart clock is supposed to be a little bit different from the Home Hub in that it has a different interface, right? It's supposed to be smart enough to dim its screen when it's getting a little later and then sort of has this interface where it will 30 minutes before you're waking up, alarm start glowing in.
Oh, that's cool.
To mimic sunlight, in your room. It's smaller. It's a little bit more intuitive. And if you want to ask for the time or look at your alarms coming up without saying anything, right? Because the Home Hub, you have to kind of interact with it almost with your voice a lot. With the smart clock, the interface is built so that just by swiping a few times, you get to the most key information for your day. You get your calendar events. You get your alarms that you've set. As well as, if you're playing music, you see the card for that and, the weather update and all of that stuff. So, I mean, it feels a little bit like too similar to the Home Hub sometimes to me, but then it has this not watered down, but rethought interface that is supposed to be more appropriate for a bedroom or a more intimate space like that. I think it won our best connected home product.
Yep.
Partly because it is only $80 and is a good way I don't have a clock in my room. I need one. So I'm actually seriously considering getting that.
I'm going to buy one.
Yeah.
I love the Home Hub, by the way. We use it all the time. It's a great photo frame.
But I played with the Lenovo one for about 5 minutes, and I have to say, it is actually a better
clock
yeah. than the Home Hub. The Home Hub is too complicated.
No, this is a good clock.
Yeah, no, this is actually,
It's not for sale yet. I just looked. Or is it?
Not yet, but I believe in spring or later this year.
Q2.
I might get my dates mixed up. There's a lot of products.
I do not blame you.
Pretty much everything
just
from CES is
later
Q2.
This year.
Yeah.
Later this year.
Always.
Q2,
yeah.
Q3.
Yeah.
Can we talk about cars?
Well, no, before we do, I want to talk about the funniest thing in the world. Kettlebells are used in gyms because they are as basic a technology as you can get. A really heavy piece of iron with a handle on it.
I want this so bad.
But Jack's Jocks has decided to make a smart kettlebell.
Thank goodness. It's about time.
They're so dumb.
No. You know what's awesome about this? It's like four kettlebells in one. It goes from 12 pounds to 42.
Wait a minute. How does it do that? Has it got jets in it?
You know how Bowflex has that system where you can twist a dial and it sort of adds theoretical weights to the ends of your...
No.
Isometric resistance.
I have those.
Yeah.
I have the Bowflex things. They're actual weights.
Yeah, there you go.
You dial them on. So this actually, and I don't know how this works because there was a really long line and I did not wait. But maybe they explain here. But that's why this is so cool, because you have one kettlebell for all of it. Maybe it's the
same. How can they make it lighter?
System.
You must have to pick up more weight. Unless they've invented anti-gravity.
Maybe the base or...
Maybe the base has more weight. But the point is, and also, I will say, as someone who's done kettlebells before, you have to be very exacting. And it's hard to get your body in the right...
No, I only would do it with a trainer. Otherwise, I'm going to hurt myself for sure.
And this... And it tracks your motion to make sure you're doing it correctly, which...
Right. That's cool.
So... You can mock it, but there are actually two really functional, awesome things about this. So I was excited that they thought this was a good product, because I thought it was too. I wanted it.
Is it magnetic? I mean, is that the thing? It increases
the Bowflex. Resistance? You flip a thing and it picks up more weights than the dumbbells. I'm sure it's something like that. How else could it be heavier?
Yeah, I mean, unless they've created some sort of energy to mass device, in which case a kettlebell.
Wait a minute. Not only do you pay $350 for this kettlebell, you have to subscribe for $30 a month for classes.
Oh, gosh. That is a trend.
Maybe you don't have to.
Trend.
Oh, it is.
Okay, it is a huge trend.
I have
trend.
A Peloton. I know all about that.
They've got all the spinning apps that you can buy now.
Yeah. I use Peloton is great, but it's expensive.
Okay. I thought these were amazeballs, and I was really excited.
See, it just shows I don't know what I'm talking about. That's all. I just don't know what I'm talking about.
I am default mocking anything with exercise, obviously.
You pick up extra weights. If you look at that base,
Yeah. It attaches more weight.
Stacey, every time I get up, I'm picking up extra weight.
Well,
by the way, how's your bladder?
Oh, that's right. Hey, look at this.
You're at 50%.
I am half full.
We got to move the show along.
Get me some coffee and I can really push this into overdrive.
You're half full.
Wait, can I ask? So are you, I would feel uncomfortable sharing that right now on the air, like how full my bladder was. So
I'm cool.
obviously you're cool, but I'm like, what happens if you're at 95%? Do you
You will probably see me start to speak a bit faster.
I think what will happen is he'll suddenly be at 5%.
And I'll probably be bouncing a little bit.
This is a safe bladder space. Imagine you're negotiating with someone and you're like, oh, they got to pee. Oh, now.
Well, no, that would really be if you could hack someone else's monitor and say, okay, he's at 9.
So I guarantee you.
If I hold him here for another 30 minutes, I'll get a much better deal.
There's no security on this. I guarantee you.
Well, what's interesting to me. I'm we could think about this knowledge. How does it apply to the world? Or let's say you want to go to the bathroom and you're like, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. You don't really have to go to the bathroom.
You're only at 35.
Seriously, I do have to go to the bathroom.
You could really prove it.
There we go. Actually, we the Jesuits, we have high schools all over the United States, all over the world.
Yes.
So we could require this so we could determine if the student's actually lying.
Then you know what happens.
Exactly.
They get a bladder buddy and they attach it to him.
And that's not creepy at all. At all.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel like...
Joe, how come you always have to go to the bathroom?
We've gone too far.
Our show today, and they're so happy, brought to you by stamps.com. Are they glad they're on this show? No, we love stamps. Actually, you know what? The nice thing about stamps.com is if you do have to go, you don't have to go to the post office. You can do it at your desk. Everything you could do at the post office, you can do at your desk with stamps.com. I'm serious. This is an awesome product. We use it here at Twit. Anybody who does mailing of any kind, but especially, I want to especially tell people who do Etsy or eBay or, you know, if you're a seller, the silliest thing in the world, I get packages on from Etsy and eBay a lot, and sometimes they got stamps. They actually licked stamps and put 100 stamps going around the edge on there. They're tied up with twine and brown paper. It's not professional looking. Go to stamps.com. It's very affordable. You set up an account. All the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service. It looks great. It looks professional. Any class of mail, any letter, any package, anywhere in the world you want to send it. And guess what? You push a button, the mail carrier comes and gets it. You don't have to get up from your desk. No more lugging mail to the post office. No more hassles. And you not only save time, you save money. You get discounted postage rates that you can't even get at the post office. It's much less than a postage meter, no special ink, no special hardware of any kind. All you need is your computer, your printer, and stamps.com. No long-term commitment, no equipment to lease. We use stamps.com for all of our mailing at Twit. In fact, I love this because I just got my Leo Laporte stamps, which is great. I got stamps with my picture on them, and then you get the stamps.com prints the indicia on it for the postage. It's awesome. If you ever get a letter from me, it'll have my picture on the stamp, and you'll go, how did he do that? Stamps.com, that's how. We use it, and you should too. We've got a great offer, a four-week trial, plus postage, plus that digital scale. Start your new year off right. Go to stamps.com, click the microphone on the top of the homepage, enter TWIT, stamps.com, offer code TWIT. It's a very, very good deal. Stamps.com, click the microphone, enter TWIT. Is it 60%, just that ad alone?
No, I actually cut off my drinking right before we started. I'm actually empty on this, but I can fill up later. Don't worry.
All right. We have just scratched the surface.
Yeah.
Maybe before we go on to more products, I would like all three of you, since you all three were at CES, to give me kind of what I always try to do, and it's hard to do with 180,000 attendees, thousands of booths, miles of aisles, spread out not just the Vegas Convention Center, even just the Sands. Sometimes you have to go all the way to Mandalay Bay on the complete other side of town. I mean, it's all over. This is a very difficult, but when you, after you've done all that and you've been there for a few days, I'll start with you, Stacey. Is there an overall theme to this year's CES? Anything you would say is
one,
a trend?
Just one theme?
Well, I don't know. Two, if you want.
Oh, jeebus.
Okay, there doesn't have to be. I mean,
no. So I did see a lot. So taking AI to a more practical place is probably a good way to phrase this. But okay. I was thinking about, you know, AI algorithms around medical devices. So being able to apply intricate, like detailed data and make assumptions and correlations that should mean something to people, I think is definitely a theme.
Okay.
It is like the most long-winded theme ever.
No, but that makes a lot of sense. It's kind of what Robert was saying. It's kind of the absorption of what was, chrome plating.
It was the buzzword. Yep.
Yeah, were buzzwords, and now is really kind of integral to many of these products.
So I would say yes and no, because I feel like a lot of this is still snake oil. Like, I mean, because I'm thinking about the medical space. Granted, the bladder thing, if it's accurate, that is really cool. I don't know.
It is accurate. Trust me.
I'm not, I don't have his bladder. So I don't know.
But, I'm starting to feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm probably getting up to that.
I think because of that thing, I would have to pee more. Like I'd be more aware of it, right?
There is another device that was getting, I'm sure the two of you got it. Did you get any of the PR blast for Attain?
Is it the one about keeping your butt clean?
No. Oh, that should be called a taint.
Yes. It was to strengthen your pelvic muscles to deal with incontinence.
Oh, I have. Yes, I got it. Yes. There's a bunch of those.
Did you get like 50 offers to come and demo the device?
Oh, I don't want to demo it.
I didn't get any to demo that.
It involved a probe, Leo, so.
It involved a probe.
Yeah.
No probes. I can't did test you? Any. There was a.
It did.
Yeah, did
you?
You
did?
Oh, my God.
What? Wait, well, I missed that. Wait, what?
Did they say, oh, yeah, of course, a priest would.
Did you go for the demo? Did you take the demo?
No.
Oh, you didn't do it.
No.
You said you did.
No.
Yeah, we were just like, too far, man. Too far.
I'm cool with knowing what my bladder's doing. I don't have to fix it right now.
Attain.
You can look it up.
Wait,
what was the butt cleaning startup? Because I'm real glad I missed that.
We just kept getting pitches for...
Toilet, right? The Echo enabled toilet. We use Toto's as a sponsor. I love Toto.
It's awesome. I wanted all of those.
Was Toto there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they were there. They actually had a self cleaning toilet that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. So it cleans you and then it cleans itself.
Yeah.
Did you stop by their booth?
The Kohler booth or
the Toto booth?
Yes.
So they had one that was facing the main walkway, and as you would walk by it. The thing would open up both of the lids. It would start playing like forest sounds and emitted a scent of freshness. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's inviting me. It wants me. I felt bad walking past.
To the Noumi intelligent toilet that Kohler showed with Kohler Connect. Because that does some of the same things, right?
Toto actually has a way fancier toilet. It's also way expensive.
They didn't get the attention that Kohler did.
So that's because it didn't have a... inside the Kohler toilet, or sorry, the Toto toilet had. Hold on, I've got to look at the press release for that because I don't remember the science.
The Life Anew, it's called.
So the Toto is technologically advanced in terms of like just toilet things. They had the anti-gravity bathtub. They have their toilet that does really cool.
Can I use my kettlebell in the anti-gravity bathtub?
I don't know. It depends on how heavy of a weight you put on it, right? But yeah, so that's what Toto is good at.
So Toto had, here we go, a bacteria neutralizing ultraviolet light in a titanium dioxide fired toilet bowl, initiating a photocatalytic process that breaks down even microscopic waste particles.
UVC. It was a UVC light in the lid. That's what it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So basically, you could poop in that thing and later off, you could eat out of it, is what it's titanium.
I do. I mean,
Toto did not say that.
Okay,
it's called the Actilite Bowl Cleansing Technology. Here it is in action. So that makes sense. I mean, honestly.
Wait, this toilet is $12,800, whereas the Kohler toilet was like $7,000, I believe. And the zero gravity tub is $18,000, $799.
What does the zero gravity tub do?
It regenerates bathers by putting them in a meditative state. No, Sherilyn actually was going to tell you what it is.
I'm still looking at super hydrophilicity in the decomposition power. I don't know. I don't even want to. Oh, man.
So this toilet is an X-Men.
It says it was shaped to simulate a gravityless floating position.
Oh, okay.
It has hydro hands massaging water jets.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about the tub or the toilet?
The tub.
Oh, God.
I would hope your toilet does not have massage jets.
I don't want my ultraviolet massaging hands. Oh, my God. Oh, here's the tub. It's a flotation tub.
You know what it has?
I like
an adjustable headrest with cascading water shoulder warmth.
Okay, that's cool. I would totally use that.
That's
way better than Alexa.
Looks like a Cialis ad. Why is my tub in the forest? Okay, so this is showing.
She's not in a tub.
By the way, I don't look like that when I'm underwater, just FYI.
That's the question. Will it work with Father Robert?
Like, if you're dead, maybe you look like that underwater.
So, wait a minute, I got to move along in this video because we're doing a lot of simulation.
There's an astronaut.
Deeply stimulating water massage gives the feeling of real hands in your bathtub.
No, it really doesn't. It really does.
That would be so creepy.
I don't want real hands.
Oh, my God. Serial killer time.
Who's touching my leg?
Can you imagine that ad? My God, it felt like real hands.
How much is this? Oh, look. You want that, Stacey.
It's
a waterfall headrest.
So they say, on the website, it's $19,000, which is more expensive than what Toto told me in the press release. So I'm kind of feeling a little disappointed.
Well, do you want the waterfall headset or not?
See, this is what it actually looks like in real life. And it's a tub.
It's a tub.
It really, I mean,
it's a really, but
that's
I don't know
any of the glamour.
Don't you
it's
want
a pretty
that soothing?
Tub, and it has lights. You forgot the color changing lights.
Well, I mean, yeah. Or I could just get one of these for like $20.
What's
and
that?
It's waterproof and just float a few of them. And this color changes too.
That is a. It's a like
Did you
a,
build
a
that?
Like a, yeah, looks like looks like a prototype.
This is what have you ever heard of that that company Empowered?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh,
They kind of upgraded their line. They originally made these for like camping and for
because it's got a solar panel on the top.
It's all solar.
It looks
powered.
Like the kind of thing you catch butterflies in, it like does. A little jar, a Leyden jar. But it's not. It's a camp light. It even has a little
handle. And this is inflatable, so it collapses
it's
down.
Inflatable.
Yeah. No. This is all.
And then what happens? It's a glowy little. Camp light.
They were really just lights, but now it's Bluetooth enabled because you know you need a Hue light when you're camping.
Oh, nice.
I mean, it's simple tech like this that I really enjoy. I took a lot of this stuff home from CES just because it's stuff that I actually will use. I'll probably drop this off the next time I'm visiting one of our other countries.
Lesson learned, though, from Toto that you should have put if you put Alexa in everything.
Yeah,
and you'll get press coverage
and waterfalls.
I actually talked to Toto last year versus Kohler. We had them on stage for my smart bathroom panel, and the zero flotation tub was already here at last CES.
Oh, see?
So I asked them why didn't they put in their products because, you know, Kohler did it last year, and Toto said that it was trying to be more thoughtful about where it was putting technology in its products, especially
Thank
in space
you.
Intimate at the bathroom. So they are figuring that out. They're just taking their time, and they have so much other tech they want to show off that doesn't really strike some of us as tech, right? Because a zero flotation tub might not be connected to a phone, but it is technology that they're trying to show off here at the show. So they have that stuff to show, and to them, that may or may not be enough. We'll see.
So Stacy said integration of AI into everything was one of the themes she saw at CES. What about you, Sherilyn? What would you, can I boil all of this down into some simple ideas for people like me?
I think themes are something you notice depending on your coverage, right? So I focused a lot on laptops this CES, and there was just a lot of exciting change happening in laptops that I wasn't expecting. NVIDIA announced a new ray tracing chip for laptops. So that's going to bring really powerful gaming performance to gaming laptops. And sure enough, a whole bunch of gaming laptop makers announced that they would have laptops with that specific NVIDIA RTX 2060 chip inside. And then Intel also had some news about it launched a new set of desktop class chipsets that's not necessarily for laptops, but more about the PC space. But it also showed off new architecture for its next generation of chips that would be really cool. So basically, they have this hybrid architecture that will let you stack things like RAM or memory on top of the CPU footprint. And so conserve a lot of space but still bring performing power that you would want out of a laptop. So it's setting the stage for a very exciting year ahead for PCs. And AI also comes into this, to Stacy's point, where they're trying to look into how to use AI to better manage performance, how to use AI to better manage battery power. So personally, because I'm a PC nerd, I think there's a lot of PC news out of CES that I wasn't expecting that excited me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, CES is... I guess to some degree, always had a lot of PCs, but you don't expect to see big announcements at CES because there's so many other things going on there. Usually, people defer to Computex or other events. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. Is it mostly design? I mean, I feel like to some degree, PCs are at a plateau. There's not a lot more you can do with a PC, but it sounds like there's maybe some innovation too, not just design.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I thought that they were stagnating too, but last year we had a resurgence of PC tech, and this year it seems like there's even more to expect. Design, performance, we're looking at every year, but this year we're also looking at more and more connected laptops. So laptops that will be always online, always connected to say, at least LTE. We're also expecting the first 5G laptops to be available in 2019. Yes. And that's another buzzword, right? 5G all over CES, even though not a lot of people had product to show for it, but everyone was like, we're going to make a 5G version of this at some point this year. And that's a lot of hype. We are expecting to see the first 5G networks and products roll out this year. But just because they were talked about at CES doesn't mean there was anything to show. There was obviously, Netgear had, I think, a 5G hotspot to launch. And then there was also 5G chipsets that Intel showed off that they meant to apply in things like base stations. So there was some news, but it wasn't the big splash about 5G that I was expecting coming into the show.
It does. Well, first of all, I guess I would ask, maybe Stacey, I know you've been following this. How far out is widespread 5G availability in the U.S.? Is it a year out, 2 years out, 5 years out?
If we're talking about like the 3GPP standard, because that's the other thing. Everyone calls everything 5G.
Well, AT&T's getting heat because of 5GE, which is really LTE.
So if
Verizon's doing something
5G,
different, 5G,
which is
in
why
their home.
Qualcomm changed that one thing in their booth. They had their pre-CES PR blast that showed Qualcomm 5G.
Yeah.
They changed it. Their signage changed in their booth to Qualcomm Real 5G. I'm like, oh, okay.
So when is real 5G going to be available, Stacey?
Widespread and in use?
Yeah.
End of 2019, I would say. I mean, you are going to see networks that are using it. You're not going to see it on phones for a while.
But it would be reasonable, since you're going to own that laptop for a few years, or a phone even for a couple of 3 years.
Well, so wait.
At this
so
point, to think about something that might have 5G capability if it's going to be available in a year.
It's more of a premise.
We have to look at the spectrum, too. Yeah. So there's two things. There's the 5G radio spec that is done by the 3GPP, which does all the cellular standards. And then there's what some people call 5G, like when AT&T. When Verizon's talking about 5G, they're talking about like, and they're doing it like for fixed broadband. Yeah. They're talking about using millimeter wave spectrum to like offer coverage in the home.
But that's not the standard that everybody's going to use when 5G really comes, right?
Well, it's unclear what's so AT&T is using some of its millimeter wave spectrum. I think I can't remember which if it's 28 or 34 or what. But they're going to have to use the same 5G standard over their 3G and maybe some of their 4G.
You get
spectrum.
What I'm asking, which is if you're going to buy a laptop, and nowadays I think you want
it depends
a couple
on
of
what
things
spectrum
with a laptop.
It's
you want a lot
with.
Of battery, right? And I think that's one thing we're seeing. And you want, I think you would, if you want an LTE enabled laptop, why not get one that's 5G capable? You're saying the standard isn't settled enough to choose.
Well,
one.
I'm saying we don't know what spectrum it's going to run over. So
you
if you're going to put a radio in, it has to cover.
Right.
So here's the thing. Okay, I spoke to Samsung and Qualcomm about 5G and the 5G rollout in 2019 as well. And, you know, the first 5G phones are coming in 2019. We are expecting Galaxy's,
Galaxy S10
Galaxy
will
flagship.
Have it. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing. To Stacey's point, I think what she's trying to get at is that, like, there are two parts to 5G NR, the new spectrum, the new specification that everyone's expecting to launch this year. There's the part that still feels a lot like LTE, and there's the part that's using millimeter waves. And to get that part working and what we think of as true 5G, a device has to have the radios, the antenna that do beamforming and beam tracing to pick up these very short frequency or short, like, distance waves. And that's what the industry, or at least I think of as true 5G. And so the phones that we're expecting to come out will have those. So the Snapdragon 855 was announced just last month, and that is compatible with 5G CPU, but without the radio that supports 5G, a phone announced with 855 might not support 5G.
You need the tunable antennas and the chip.
Well, and
exactly.
You also
listen to her.
The infrastructure.
Good
she
job.
Knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
So actually, it sounds like, and are any of these 5G ready laptops, do any of them have those features?
We haven't seen any announced with them yet. Any. They're just saying that they're going to make them. So we need to see when the devices actually get announced, whether they have these antenna, these components that
That's
make them
to look
have
for.
To
okay.
millimeter wave. Yeah.
But you should see them. It's much easier to do like beamforming and cram more into a laptop than it is into a phone. So right. I would expect more capabilities from the laptop than just a plain phone.
Is it holding That's up it. Manufacturers, though, that the standard is still in flux or?
No, the standard's not in flux. NR is specified and ready to go, but we are looking at the next stage, which is how to bring IoT into 5G. And that's what is more, looking forward. Right now, they have settled on NR. And, you
so
know,
we
NR
have a
can
spec.
Go on
is it up to implementation then that's unknown? Yeah. Or?
Yeah, it's more or less ready to go. It's whether the carriers are going to deploy it widespread.
Right.
There's
how
a lot of infrastructure.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have to remember, since you're using such a high frequency, that does not penetrate nearly as well.
You need many, many, many more cell sites.
Far more. I mean, not just double or triple. It is an order of magnitude more.
Is it really that many more?
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. But I mean, it's fast. But you need
to be 5 feet away from a micro millimeter.
Well, so both Verizon and AT&T, though, when they actually do deployments, they're going to use both millimeter wave when they can, and then they're going to use other spectrum.
So
it's not all going to go. So yes, you're going to see them compatible.
So it would be fair to say it's even though the spec is defined, implementation is still in flux, and so buying 5G ready hardware today is difficult to do. You can't be sure. One of the things that happened this week, Samsung sent out invitations to their event February 20th in San Francisco, and they're going to probably announce an S10. They're probably going to be a 5G ready S10 as well as that foldable phone.
Wait, what is Mobile World Congress? Isn't it?
No, they're doing it early.
No, they're doing it earlier.
They're jumping
than
the gun.
Okay. I was like, wait a second.
I know. So, and we'll cover it. I was invited, but I think I'd rather sit here and watch it from afar. Is that going to be implemented? Well, we don't know yet, right? We don't know how.
So I asked again, sorry to keep cutting in. Because
please, Sherilyn, you know what's going on. I want to know.
I had this exact conversation with Samsung and Qualcomm on my stage, and I asked them, hey, when your phone does launch with 5G on it, are we going to turn on our phone? Are we going to see the 5G icon at where you would see, right? And Qualcomm's answer for me was that this is sort of something you'll turn on, you'll first see 4G, and then it's something that will roll out later. So I don't think when you first get the S10 in hand that you will see that, but it is something that has to go through some sort of update. So the phone is ready for it.
But
the
it's a software update. It's not a hardware update. It's a software.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you
and, of course,
you
it depends what carrier you're on and whether they're going to offer it in your neck of the woods and all of that, too.
Yeah, I think the rural rollout is going to be terribly slow. I think that
it's not going to come to the woods. That was for sure. If you need 10 times the number of cell sites, the last place they're going to put it is out in the woods.
But
it's all going to be in big urban areas at first.
You don't need it in the woods so much because, I mean, as long as you have coverage out there. If you have no coverage, you're not going to magically suddenly get coverage. But, you know, there's not a lot of people sucking up your bandwidth there. So
it's less important. So I guess what I was trying to get at is, if people listening now should start thinking about getting 5G hardware, and it sounds like that's probably not the case.
No, I think to a practical deployment of 5G, we are an upgrade cycle away.
Yeah. Okay. So I can still look. What was your favorite, Sherilyn, laptop that you saw? Some of these are very, very pretty.
Mine. I know
what
mine.
What is this? Is this the Alienware? Which one is this? That's beautiful.
Man, I don't even think that's an actual laptop.
Never mind. Okay. I do like the HP Elite lines. This is their Omen 15, which is
my favorite.
The sequence. I bet you have an Acer Swift 7 in mind.
No.
Seven is pretty, though.
The Swift 7 is absolutely pretty. They did a great job making that bezel-less, but the Acer Predator Triton 900. That thing is a monster.
The Predator Triton 900.
It's an IPS screen, 4K touch. It's got an easy hinge, the easel hinge, so you can actually move the screen closer to you, turn it to a tablet. It's a NVIDIA RTX 2080, 4,000, 32 gigabytes of memory. It's a RAID 0 SSD. It even has a port on the side. If you use an Xbox controller, you can actually plug in the USB receiver
screen
and then tuck it away.
It
is a
wild.
Beautiful machine.
So it kind of has little levers and...
Right. Eighth gen Intel i7. I think it's the 8750.
You know, you got to feel sorry for Apple because they're already behind. And now they're just like they've been lapped, basically. Right.
I mean, if you're talking about Apple being lapped and talking about what we were just, you know, discussing earlier, Apple hasn't even talked about a 5G phone. We're not expecting an Apple 5G phone to come out.
They said not till 2020, probably.
Right. Yeah.
Partly
that's
because they're abandoning Qualcomm. So Intel has Intel or Apple have to figure this one out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a prickly one for them.
Yeah.
I
was bummed because my daughter for Christmas wanted a gaming laptop. But so we spent a lot of time trying to find a gaming laptop and she hated all of them. And so she ended up with a MacBook Pro that is like severely underpowered.
That she can't play games on at all.
Yeah. I'm like,
you could play Fortnite on it.
But well, what does your daughter want? She wanted a nice screen.
Was it the design or it was the screen?
No, it was the screen. She hates matte screens, which they're everywhere. So then we were looking at touch. I mean, and part of it was also a cost thing. I was not going to spend $4,000 on a computer for
just playing games. They have an $1,800 version that has a 144 hertz panel. It's basically the same processor, same GPU. Same memory setup, same rate. It's not as sexy as the $4,000.
This is the Acer model. Predator.
They have the 500. So they have the 500 and the 900.
Okay.
Yeah. So this was our journey like before Christmas, and then with the NVIDIA news, I was like, God. Yeah.
So I do think this NVIDIA ray tracing
will be
very interesting.
I was actually going to get a Blade. The office was going to get me a Blade, a Razer Blade, because I needed something for editing on the go.
And that's their eGPU, external GPU. Right. Yeah.
But our procurement process is so slow that I can now say, oh, no, hold off.
You have Michelangelo's Blade.
Basically.
So, Sherilyn, did you pick? Because I still need you to pick. Which one do you like the best?
We gave the award for best PC to the Dell XPS 13 with its new Dolby Vision HDR display. The Dell XPS line is so reliable. It's hard to, argue against it. And you know what? I fought for it to win an award simply for the fact that Dell finally moved the webcam from below the screen to above it.
Hallelujah. Yes. Such a strange. No more nose cam. Yeah.
I was going to buy an XPS and I was like, oh no. So this year...
I have one issue with the Dell HP Alienware and MSI laptops, the gaming laptops, and that is they do great performance for about 5 minutes. The cooling is not nearly enough what it needs to be, so it always derates.
Yeah.
Which is why...
This is a problem in general
I'll still go with the larger gaming laptops because I can use it at
full
speed.
I'm kind of surprised because I like the XPS line. Yeah. I've had 13s and 15s. I like the almost bezel-less design, but it isn't exactly an inspiring... computer. I mean, it's kind of just reliable. A generic looking laptop.
Oh, I am with you. I mean, here's the thing.
It's white.
The white one came out last year with a stain resistant coating, which was interesting. I think the awards giving process, we debate things, right? And there are inspiring things on the list, but there is also like what ends up ultimately being the
practical.
Best of the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
The actual best. And I think the XPS line is, there are other, I mean, we also have a gaming category, gaming hardware category. And so that's where we look to give our gaming laptops kind of more of a focus. For laptops itself or PCs alone, I think it made sense for us. There are our other considerations were, HP's laptop. We had... it didn't make the final cut, but Huawei had a new MateBook that was also pretty nice.
Oh, that's it. Now, okay, wait a minute. Stop there right there. So I really like the Huaweis. I think they're beautiful. But, I mean, should you buy a Huawei after all the... I mean, now who's suing them? Poland is suing? I mean, they arrested Huawei executives and... in Canada.
Well, Huawei fired that executive after being caught for spying.
Okay, well...
Well, it's all better now.
Honestly, what is CNET's point take on this? Do you stay away from Huawei after all the noise, or is it?
I don't know what CNET takes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Engadget. Did I say CNET? I apologize. What is Engadget's take on all this?
I think we like everyone have to caution about it because we don't know for sure whether or not these things are actually spying on you for the Chinese government, but it never hurts to be too careful. I personally use a Huawei laptop for conventions.
You use
and
a Mate 20 or what do you use?
I use this laptop. This is a MateBook.
It's beautiful. Isn't it gorgeous? It's so thin. It's light.
It's thin, light. It's powerful enough. It lasts all day. Yeah. And I really like it a lot. So there's not much to
and President
to fight.
Xi knows everything you're doing.
You know what? Listen, it's not like I'm doing anything too terrible.
Exactly. Who cares?
Most of her stuff is published, so.
Right.
Eventually, right? But I mean, I read a lot of stuff about China on that laptop too. But the phones are a bigger concern because then that's like a more personal device. Right. That's you got radios that are constantly communicating to any sort of network, and so it's more easy to hack or hijack, or listen in on. So it's something we my team will always mention that, hey, we love it. The hardware is great. The performance is excellent. But you always have this lingering doubt about whether or not you can actually buy it. And I think that reason alone keeps us from ever really recommending it.
In a way, that's a shame because all of these are made in China.
Right.
They all come through the supply chain and are vulnerable at various points in the
supply
chain.
I've got some bad Huawei stories, though. So I
really? You think Huawei is worse, say, than any other Chinese company?
They had more access than a lot of other Chinese companies. I think we're past the NDA on this, but I worked with Huawei in a data center once where for a show.
By the way, whatever that is now, making a lot of noise in your mic.
It's now transmitting to my mic.
Okay.
No, but so we were configuring their switches. We couldn't get them to work right, and one of the 3COM/HP engineers jumped on the console and was looking through their code, and they found a line, HP copyright.
You know? Oh,
so they had actually just taken HP microcode and run it on
their
switches.
That's not a nice thing to do, but it's not spying on you either.
It's not spying on you, but it's like, well, then what kind of level of competence do you have here?
Or integrity. Yeah.
And that really left, and that was 10 years ago. That left a hugely bad taste in my mouth of ever working with the company, because if they don't even know their own gear,
right,
the stuff that they were selling for, you know, multiple tens of thousands of dollars, I don't know if I want to do business with them.
This is a conversation we have been having over the last couple of months a lot, and I don't know what the right answer is to it. Fortunately, there are many other choices. On the other hand, if Huawei is innocent, I hate to...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, they're being hurt economically, seriously,
Not that badly.
They do all right in China.
Yeah. There's a global market
Asia.
For this.
That's true. It's just in the U.S. they're not doing well. All right.
They're doing really well in India.
Yeah.
So.
All right, so your vote, Dell XPS 13, which I've always thought is nice. I do like these new Omen 15s from HP. They look pretty.
Do you want to get the ARM-powered one, Leo?
So the Leo, to clarify, that picture that you're looking at is the Spectre X360.
That's
and
what
not
I thought.
Omen.
It looks just like a Spectre. Oh, okay. This is the Omen. Oh, that's ugly. Nothing. Yick. But it does have, I have to say, it does have that new NVIDIA 2070 in there.
And it's got the 240Hz display. It's a really good gaming laptop.
It's a gaming laptop,
right. To Father Robert's point, it's not, you know, the most thermally powerful system.
This is becoming, you know, Apple got a lot of attention for its i9 processor and thermal throttling. And then they put out a software patch that seems to have helped.
Right.
By slowing it down?
Well, it slows it down, but they recognize that
they can't get over
10% of performance is 90% of the thermal waste.
Right.
So if they can balance that last 10%, they can still give you an experience that is almost like having full power, but you never suddenly drop frames down to like a third of what it should be.
Right. Are other laptop manufacturers finding similar solutions?
Actually, Acer does that. They NVIDIA does that. It's called Max-Q.
Right.
So it's take it up to the point at which it can be maintained, not to the point at which you're going to have to throttle down in 10 minutes and stay at low performance for the next half hour.
Anything good from Lenovo? You know I'm a Lenovo fan.
Some of the Lenovo gear actually was quite nice. It all looks the same. I mean, that's the Lenovo thing. It all looks the same.
Yeah.
But
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I did manage to get around to writing in detail about the Lenovo laptops we saw, but I don't know if you're a ThinkPad fan, Leo.
I am.
You are.
I am a ThinkPad guy.
Yeah, there are new ThinkPads, the 7th generation X1 Carbon and I believe the 4th or 5th generation X1 Yoga. The biggest changes, I believe, are in, you know, external appearance-wise, there's a new like carbon fiber dot pattern on the X1 Carbon, but the material is lighter than before. So some people might say it feels a little flimsy. Some people actually prefer the lighter footprint. And then the Yoga itself has a metal chassis and it feels heavier, but it also at the same time feels more premium, so it's a trade-off. I don't know what you personally would prefer, but maybe if you get to see them in person you might have some strong feelings.
I have a second generation Yoga, which I've now given to my daughter for her audio production, and I have a T470, which is a couple of years ago, so I like the industrial strength Lenovo's. Mm. I might get a new Yoga.
It's a good look.
They run Linux so nicely.
They do.
That's really my real reason for liking them. I can only tolerate so much Windows 10, and then eventually.
I like the flexibility of the Yoga. I can't like really justify buying one just for fun, but I do love
You like two-in-ones. You like that idea of bending it over. Yeah.
Well, I like it for travel, although I wouldn't want a heavier one because they tend to be a little heavier.
Yeah.
But I do like, you know, because I spend a lot of time on airplanes, being able to, like, squish my computer.
Well, it's also tent mode's great for watching movies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They had OLED screens. The Yoga 2, second generation Yoga I had an OLED screen. Has everybody abandoned OLED screens and laptops?
They all came back. Sorry.
They're back.
AMOLED screens came back.
Yay.
On laptops.
They're gorgeous. Yes. They're colorful. They're brilliant. Okay. They're power efficient.
Yeah, they're pretty.
Yeah.
Are they power efficient? Because wasn't that one of the knocks was that they use too much juice?
Well, if you use them correctly, they're power efficient.
Oh, good.
Wait,
so I'm
how
glad.
Do I use a screen correctly? Hold
no,
on.
No, if the manufacturer uses it correctly.
Oh, okay. It's like, oh, crap.
You have to hold it to the side.
Like hold on, that. Guys. I'm maximizing my battery life.
No, but if your daughter likes glossy screens, she would love an OLED laptop. They're gorgeous.
Yeah, we got her a Yoga first, and she did not care for it at all.
Really?
I was sad. Yeah. She's kind of fussy.
Well, but that's the great thing. There's so many choices. There's so many options out there.
So that's interesting.
There aren't if you like a glossy screen, but I can't wait. And you need a discrete graphics card. Those were my two. They were mutually exclusive.
I kind of hate glossy screens. I really do.
I know. I do. Like a lot of people do, but she loves them. And
I'm a glossy guy as well.
I kind of like a glossy screen.
I think the colors look better. The darks look darker.
But I mean, if you're going for color accuracy.
Oh, who cares about accuracy?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I'm immersed in my own world. I don't care. I'm not picking my Pantone, you know. I will also say a lot of the screens are really dim. Like we noticed that because I haven't really shopped for a laptop in a while. But we're talking 250 nits or some I was trying to figure out the right metric, and I'm not a laptop.
Now, are you sure the screens were dim, or did they just have Microsoft Adaptive Brightness turned on? Because that's the first thing I turn off every time I get a laptop.
Well, maybe that's what I should, because I was just
a horrible, horrible feature.
Yeah, it was so muddy, and her games are so beautiful. I was like, why would you do this?
Yeah, seriously, just try that. Just go to the power settings, go to advanced. Go to monitor, and you have two settings for adaptive brightness. When it's plugged in, when it's on battery, turn them both off. And it feels like a brand new screen.
Where were you when we were trying out screens? Oh, terrible.
You know what? I think you would have liked this Spectre X360.
That is a sexy
with a 15-inch AMOLED.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is that
I didn't even look at laptops at CES because after I heard the NVIDIA news, I was like, I'm just going to have buyer's remorse out the wazoo.
Well, the Razer with the 2080 looked nice. I mean, it's just like the previous Blade, but who's going to go wrong with a Razer?
And I would have given your daughter the Spectre Folio because it's leather. No, Sherlyn, no leather laptops for you.
There actually was one laptop in the sands that was made of bamboo, not covered in bamboo.
Ooh.
The case was bamboo. I'm like, okay.
It's eco-friendly.
Kind of. Until it starts warping because it got wet. I don't know.
All right, Father Robert, your turn. Big trends this year, CES 2019.
Big trends would be companies misusing or conflating automation with AI.
Oh, yeah, you see a lot of that.
That really bothers me.
That's like 2 years ago where everything had blockchain.
Right.
Now
right.
AI is the new blockchain, right?
There's still lots of blockchain.
Oh, blockchain with AI would even be better.
No, yeah. There's an AI blockchain company that's also voice enabled.
I'm like, does it do security too? Because that's important.
There were some great companies showing off AI applications that are wonderful, but it is still a little buzz-worthy in that some company are including AI kits in their products that don't need AI kits at all.
Right.
They just need, if this happens, then do that.
Right.
And that's not an AI application.
Right.
I also saw a trend. I'm doing the negative trends because they did the positive ones.
Okay.
I saw the trend of forgetting the past, specifically in the car pavilion. You've got a lot of connected accessory manufacturers. So connected dashboards, connected entertainment systems that, when I started asking simple security questions, like, is this directly connected to the CAN bus? They were like, yeah, sure. There's no problem with that.
Yeah.
And that just blows my mind. It's like, wait a minute. It was just a couple of years ago that Valisec and Miller showed that they could take over a Jeep Cherokee remotely.
Right. Mm-hmm. The
Okay. But they didn't do that by attaching to the CAN bus. They got into the chip that controlled that.
So but the problem is everything was CAN bused together. So if you can get in the infotainment system, then you can get into the car control system.
So they were able to pivot from the entertainment system to the CAN bus because it was connected. And there was only one manufacturer I talked to that did it the right way, where they said, no, there's actually a device between the entertainment center and the CAN bus. It only allows for one-way communication. So we can read messages from the CAN bus. We cannot write anything to it.
I was talking to Sam Abul-Samid, who is our car guy. He's from Navigant Research. He's on my radio show now every week talking about cars. And that's exactly what he was talking about, is how at CES we're moving from small controllers and ASICs, you know, hundreds of them and all sorts of things, to a couple of powerful, simple, big computers that do everything. It's but then there's that security concern that if it does everything, it means it can do anything.
Well, the CAN bus was never designed to be publicly accessible.
Yeah.
It's not. There is no authentication. There's no encryption. So if you're on the CAN bus, you have control of everything on the CAN bus.
Yeah.
Oh, and Apple. I think that.
Apple?
I know. That was the first time they were at CES.
Thank you. Yeah. Apple say, and Samsung making their big announcement that iTunes, their client, is going to be in the Samsung television.
Wow. That was interesting. I mean, these are almost hereditary enemies, Samsung and Apple. They've been suing each other for decades. All of a sudden, Samsung's putting iTunes in its TVs. And not just Samsung, LG, lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
AirPlay 2.
I hate smart screens, and I won't ever use any apps on
a smart screen. An external smart device connected. I want a monitor. I don't want the TV to know anything.
But I think just from a strategic point of view, this feels so much like way back when Apple started licensing out their OS.
Yeah.
Apple's thing is it's theirs. They own it from soup to nuts. And the fact that they're now letting another manufacturer take one of their babies, one of their last major profitable centers, and include it in one of their TVs and tweak it the way that they want it, great for choice, but I think that's a horrible mistake for Apple.
Steve Kovac, writing at CNBC, says Apple's famous walled garden is starting to show cracks. He says this is all part and parcel with the new Apple, where they're not breaking down phone sales anymore individually, they're not, or product sales at all. After Tim Cook's advisory that they were going to make less money because of China this year, after Apple's pointing to services and away from per unit sales, this is the future. The Apple selling services is, he says, this is evidence, further evidence that Apple's sees its future as selling services, not products.
Well, I mean, that's Microsoft pivoted to that.
And if you're doing that, I mean, wasn't it? I mean, that's when iPod took off, is when Steve Jobs finally got off his high horse and said, "All right, we'll make iTunes for Windows." That's when iPod sales really took off. And so, isn't it a good move for Apple to say, "Well, look, we're going to make iTunes," especially since they now have, or it looks like they're going to have a TV service of some kind this year. With their own product.
But one of the first things that Steve Jobs did when he came back was he took everything back from all the Scully years.
Well, Steve did not want to do iTunes for Windows. He had to be persuaded
that.
But it turned out to be the right thing. Go ahead, Stacey.
So let's think about it macro, big picture, because there's been a couple things, and there was the Tim Cook interview. So if you think about opening it up, if you think about the phone market being saturated, if you think about Apple saying, "Oh, crap, our music is still a big deal and we can push it and keep people in our ecosystem in this market that we're not abandoning, but it's no longer a growth market for us." And you look at them going into medical devices. If you think about Apple being good at selling hardware, really well-designed, fantastic hardware, really crappy at services, really crappy at the cloud, and they're going to continue to be that way because of their AI. Their privacy focus makes them somewhat of a laggard on AI and customization, which I think will be really important going ahead in a lot of the consumer electronics world. So if you say, okay, we're going to do what we can to shore up the base and let people have that while we focus on the next generation of hot hardware, you look at healthcare, hardware really matters there, because designing healthcare devices right now, the way they're built is really clunky. So if you think about bringing, that's a place where they can own everything from hardware all the way to the software, whole soup to nuts. So if you look at it from that context, I don't know if it's really Apple getting services religion so much as it's like, all right, that market's pretty played out. Let's Let's sow the seeds of
new territory.
So you see
this as this is transitional. This is a way for them to get enough running room to find that next cost center.
Basically, yeah.
Okay. Oh, interesting. All right.
You guys are so good because I am not good at editing myself and making it coherent. I love y'all.
We're here to back you up, baby.
Actually,
I'm with you, Stacey. I can't get a word out at all. I can't talk today, but thank God. Sherilyn Lowe is here from Engadget. She is reviews editor there. Father Robert's visiting from the Vatican, where he has brought, I don't know what, did you bring some crackers and holy water?
I don't know about
for
my
us?
Bladder. It's at 70%.
How's your bladder?
No, actually, I'm 50%.
You haven't,
I didn't drink anything. I learned not to drink anything right before the show.
Can we feed you water just to see what
happens? Drink some water during this break.
Jeremy, can you fill up my thermos and I'll just down this sucker?
We want to see how long it takes. Great. Talk about privacy invasions. Also, that's Stacey Higginbotham. She's a regular on This Week in Google. And, of course, the Stacey on IoT site, StaceyOnIoT.com, and the great IoT podcast she does with Kevin Toefel every week. Thank you, Stacey, for being here. All of you for being here. Stacey, this is why I always surround myself with smart people, because they can always make sense out of the nonsense coming out of my mouth. So thank
blah,
you.
Blah, blah, blah. So you mean this? Yes,
that's it.
That smart thing.
Thank you. You and Jeff do that every Wednesday on This Week in Google. That's why you're there. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting system. Yeah, I said accounting, but really, you don't have to know any accounting to use FreshBooks. This is a great way to get your finances in shape. If you're a freelancer, a small business, it starts with sending out professional-looking invoices in seconds. You can always see which invoices have been paid, which have not, which are overdue, even which invoices have been viewed. So no more excuses from clients who say, oh, I didn't get your invoice. And clients will pay you faster, up to 2 times faster on average, because you can accept online payments directly from the invoice. That's magic. And in the process of creating invoices, you can put expenses in your invoice. Just take a picture of the receipt with your FreshBooks app on your phone. It'll go right into the invoice. In that process, it'll also, by the way, automatically connect to your bank account and update your expenses daily. In that process, you're doing accounting. You're getting all of the accounting, the true double entry accounting. And that means you'll always know, am I making money? You'll be ready for tax time. The mobile app helps you keep tabs on your business no matter where you are. And, of course, because it's an online app, it's a FreshBooks dashboard, they're always adding new features. They've just added an accounting and reports tab in the nav bar. That means you can get easy access to the numbers that matter most to you. It is true double entry accounting. You've got 7 new features, including cost of goods sold. These are some of the reports you can get. Other income, general ledger, trial balance, charts of accounts, accountant access. That's really nice. Tax time's coming. Wouldn't it be nice just to say, hey, here's all my information. You do the work. You can get your balance sheet anytime you need it. Also new, advanced payments. You can mark time as unbilled, revenue streams, and more. It's the nice thing about FreshBooks is it's immediately intuitive and easy to use. And as you use it, these features start to kick in. You get more and more benefit. Things like creating proposals with rich text content and images, getting e-signatures from your clients. Yeah, that's one of the features of FreshBooks. I can go on and on. They have great support anytime you have a question, and Learning Hub videos, which make it very easy to learn new features. Look, stop using Word and Excel to do your billing. That's what I used to do. That's when I found FreshBooks. Now, that's been over 10 years since I started using FreshBooks. Make 2019 the year you start using FreshBooks. You can do it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/twit. FreshBooks.com/twit. If you do me a favor, though, put This Week in Tech in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That way we'll know. And they'll know, more importantly, that you heard it here. FreshBooks.com/twit. We had fun this week, and I think we have, am I correct, a little mini movie, thanks to Victor. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
Megan Maroney finished a workout.
Mm-hmm.
Megan Maroney finished a workout. You've already done 2 workouts today.
I'm glad you still get those alerts, because you're not on social media.
Do you get my alerts?
Yeah, I usually just compare myself to you.
Yeah,
you've
and
only
I,
taken 413 steps.
I just got up.
all about Android.
We are super thrilled to welcome two folks from Palm.
Well, everybody's very familiar with Palm as a brand name, but we've talked about the Palm phone very recently with the kind of companion device.
You can leave your phone behind and feel connected, but you're not necessarily consumed by it. And we have this software feature called Life Mode, where essentially it's like Do Not Disturb just on automatically. So you have to physically enable yourself to be distracted.
Tech News Weekly.
According to an investigation from Motherboard this week, T-Mobile, AT&T, and Sprint are selling our real-time location data, and it's ending up in the hands of bounty hunters who can easily geolocate our phones. Journalist Joseph Cox knows this to be true because he paid a bounty hunter to do it.
They will use it to track down fugitives, find people who have skipped their bail. And I mean, they will, of course, argue that that is a legitimate purpose. But other people are going to disagree because there isn't consent necessarily being done there.
Twit, coming to you from 38 degrees, 14 minutes north, 122 degrees, 38 minutes west.
You know that.
Jim Cutler knows
private data.
How do you know that, Jim Cutler? Knows exactly where we are. Palm's still around. So, Father Robert, while you're consuming mass quantities of...
It's spilling it on myself.
Wah-wah.
Oh, that
you brought
water?
Some other interesting things, one of which was making your microphone buzz.
Yeah.
This is interesting. What is this?
So, I stopped by the SANS Innovation Center, and there was a company there called PowerCast that does wireless power. Now, I know what you're thinking of wireless power.
I've always mocked it myself.
It's chi, right? It's right. Okay, put it on the pad. No, this is actual. There's no battery on this.
Through the air.
This is just an antenna.
A little antenna with an LED on it.
Right.
And as you get it closer, but not on top of.
On top of, right. So these are what are called harvesters.
Move this over here. We can get a camera shot of this. So it's light. There's nothing in this.
Yeah. It's just broadcasting at 915 megahertz. So that's the same as RFID.
It's not burning my hand and giving me cancer.
No. And this is like the super dumbed down version because they have the industrial version that can get you up to 20 feet.
So this is lighting up because it's getting charged right now.
Correct. So you're getting power through the air, through this antenna into this little chip right here. That's a harvester. It's harvesting RF energy.
Like a foot away?
How close? So this one you can actually get about 5 feet.
Wow.
As long as you're polarized.
How much energy does it generate?
You can transmit.
How efficient is this?
This is doing 1 watt. You can transmit up to 5 watt according to spec.
Wow.
Right. But I mean. And
5 watt to how many feet?
Five with the industrial version, 5 watt to 20 feet.
Okay.
Right. So the idea behind this is pretty simple. Imagine all the devices that you have that you only use occasionally. So from mice to console controllers.
This is good for IoT stuff.
IoT stuff, right. As long as you're within range of one of these things at some point during the day, you'll top off the battery.
What about interference with existing other radio?
Well, it did, in fact, affect your microphone.
Right, so if I get too close to this mic.
Well, not now. No. I think it was more the wire, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Oh,
right there.
I hear it right now.
Yeah. So if I'm close enough to that,
to the cable.
Yeah. You'll actually hear a little bit of tapping, but it's 915 megahertz, which you already have working in your house. If you have anything that's RFID, you've got 915 megahertz, and if you go outside, you're getting more radiation than you get from this. So I mean, it is FCC approved, so it doesn't interfere. It's not supposed to interfere with anything else. It hasn't been looked at by the FDA, so I wouldn't sleep on top of it. But the power levels are so low that it's not going to really be a health hazard. It's non-ionizing.
No, I'm just thinking about, 5 watts at 20 feet. I'm trying to think about how much that would charge. So it'd be good for sensors.
Not for phones. Definitely not mobile devices.
Oh, yeah, no.
Way
no,
too
not.
Much. Right.
I'm just thinking about like
although
the
old
that
smartphone chargers were a few watts.
Yeah.
They weren't.
Yeah. But I mean, I think, your console controllers. Imagine never having to come back to a dead one. Your garage door opener, your remote control.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about like, so there's a lot of like.
Don't put it in a studio.
Are you getting the buzz?
Computer vision chips that are like just basically like, oh, wake up this device that actually has power. So there's some interesting notification kind of options you could have with the sensor.
Right.
So, okay.
How much?
So they're still kind of dev kitting it right now.
So this isn't out yet.
No, though it is out, but you can get this one for something like $280. It's not cheap, but, they've been doing mostly industrial. They're now trying to break into commercial and retail. Oh. And I mean, the technology
is it because industrial isn't paying them? Why would you go from industrial to...
Because there's a billion consumers.
Yeah, I know, but industrial people, they spend a lot of money and they have real needs.
I think it's because they were able to tweak the technology while they were doing industrial. And now that they think they have it to the point where they can drop the price probably like sub 100 at some point in the near future, this just becomes something that becomes table stakes. This gets built into your next smart desk or into your next monitor so that all you have to do is keep your devices, your keys near your monitor, and they're going to get charged. I mean, the spec is really, really good. And I love this technology. I mean, I've already ordered a couple of the harvester chips from I think I got them from Aero, because they're just a couple of cents each, and it's something that I can play with on my maker table. I mean, this is actual wireless power. This is not sci-fi. This is something that you can buy today and have something charged up and powered without actually having a battery on it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I'll wait till the FDA weighs in.
or I will sleep with this, and then you can...
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm dead in a year, then don't buy it.
Or just see if your bladder's full.
Yeah, actually.
let's check. You've been drinking. It's still 50.
I'm still at 50. Well,
your kidneys are too slow.
I'm not
slow.
Dumping it straight
into my
bladder.
Faster kidneys,
my
friend.
There's a filtration effect happening.
Exactly. Yeah, by the end of the show, that'll probably be up to 6 or 7.
So speaking of too much information, The Intercept had the story, and I'm really curious what you think about this, Stacey. You remember Ring, the Ring doorbell, it was for many, I think 2 or 3 years, a good, strong sponsor. Yeah. I have a Ring doorbell. I like Ring. I have to say, Sam Biddle is not my favorite person in the world. He used to work for Gawker, and he's frankly, I don't know if he's a very good reporter. So I wanted to get your take on this, Stacey. Let me give you the accusation, and then you can respond. Yeah. They said in the process, starting in 2016, in the process of attempting to add face recognition and other artificial intelligence features to Ring cameras, they provided its Ukraine-based research and development team access to a bucket on Amazon's S3 that contained every video created by every Ring camera ever that the Ukrainian researchers were able to download and share the video files. And in fact, he reports that some of the team were sharing the files and laughing as they saw people kissing and doing other things. Now, most of the Ring cameras I'm aware of are outdoor cameras. I guess Ring does make some indoor cameras.
They do make indoor cams now.
I'm kind of glad I don't have an indoor camera. Ring says this came from the neighbors feature of Ring, and these were videos that had been approved for sharing as a proactive neighborhood watch. That's not what Sam's implying. What happened here?
So there's two things to think about here. One is outdoor versus indoor camera. The other is if the neighbor's thing is accurate, because the information a couple weeks ago reported that they did have security lapses and that unlike other companies that were doing cameras, Ring was pulling customer video for improving its AI. So Nest apparently does not do that. Neither did Canary. And then tie this to the fact that I had a conversation probably 6 months ago with a security firm who had just been hired by a large company that makes cameras to put in place retroactive security procedures because employees were getting access or employees had access and were abusing their access to people's camera feeds. I don't know if it was Ring. I really did a lot of reporting trying to figure out who the heck that was.
Right.
I never made it anywhere. So
Ring's response was, we take the privacy and security of our customers' information seriously. In order to improve our service, we view and annotate certain Ring videos. These videos are sourced exclusively from publicly shared Ring videos from the Neighbors app in accordance with our terms of service and from a small fraction of Ring users who provided their explicit written consent to allow us to access and utilize their videos for such purposes. Furthermore, they say we have strict policies in place for team members. We implement systems to restrict and audit access to information, et cetera,
et cetera. And they probably do now. What the information reported was this was happening in, 2016?
Yeah.
I believe 2016, 2017, yeah. Which fits with the time frame that I had talked to some people about.
Interesting.
And again, this also ties into, you don't know what you're giving up when you sign something. Like, yeah, it might be in their terms of service, but when Ring's like, You're like, oh, I'm going to connect my doorbell. They're like, do you agree? You're like, click, moving on.
Right.
Connect to Wi-Fi.
Biddle says that they don't, in fact, tell people even in the Neighbors app that they may be showing their video to other people.
The Neighbors app, they do. They actually
I mean,
say,
that's what the neighbor,
upload it.
They didn't say they'll do face recognition. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, that's what the Neighbors app does. In fact, I use the Neighbors app, and my neighbors do, and we can see people, you know, stealing packages and so forth, and it's actually very valuable. If it's true, I apologize, because we've been advertising Ring products for some time. I use Ring, and we didn't know this was happening. And for those of you who watch our shows who bought Ring cameras because of us, I apologize. I had no knowledge of this. I hope it's not true. You're right. Biddle says Ring's spokesperson wouldn't answer any questions about the company's past data policies. Remember, Ring was purchased by Amazon and is now an Amazon company. So maybe Amazon changed the policies, maybe not.
Jamie Siminoff, who I have known for years.
The founder of Ring.
It did not surprise me that they did not have policies in place for this. Let's put it that way.
I'm sorry. I have to interrupt because we have an urgent.
Whoa, what just happened?
Well, Jammerby gave me a liter of water.
Go ahead, Robert. You
right
have
back.
My permission to. He's reached a perfect 10.
Wait, does he really have to go?
Does it go to 11?
Yeah, like when it was at 9, did that work? Did you
he's gone.
When do you feel it?
Wow.
I know. I want to know. I have so many questions.
All right. Yeah, so I feel bad. And, you know, I think I like Jamie. I've talked to Jamie. He was a fan of Twit. That's why his ads were on Twit. This kind of thing can't happen. But I think it increasingly in this world, we're going to have to, companies like Ring are going to have to pay stricter attention to their own practices. And I guess it's something you've always talked about, Stacey. It behooves us to make sure that our you know, if we put a camera in, that they've got good privacy policy in place.
Well, and it's not, I mean, in the case of good privacy policies, you still are trusting the company that has your data.
You always
have to. Like from the time that, remember that New York Times reporter who did the review on Tesla, and Tesla like freaked out and sent like all the data from his like review trip? I've always been very cognizant of that for any connected device in my home, not just as a reviewer, but just as like a person. I'm like, if a company gets frustrated with me, they can just pull whatever connected data from any device and broadcast it, or their employees could.
Yikes.
And I mean, that's how I think about things, because I'm paranoid and weird.
Yeah. We may, I have cameras in a lot of places, including in my car. And of course, I drive a Tesla, and I know for a fact, because we had a problem early on with the Tesla where Lisa and I thought it was going forwards when we had the car in reverse. And I called them and they said, no, according to the log, you had the car in forward.
Oh, you know what? Here's a secret tip for your
that
Tesla.
That was kind of a shock.
Or even your So just hit the mic button whenever anything weird happens in your car and just say bug report and it sends it automatically.
I did know about that. I found out about that later. I thought that was cool. But they know everything. They log everything. Everything you do in that car. And then I have an Owl dash cam, which is also uploading videos. Oh, my God. I'm just so screwed.
Wait, you just told people that you've got a spot, an Amazon spot in your bedroom. And you're like,
no, it's not in my bedroom.
Oh,
it's in my closet. Because Lisa won't allow it in the bedroom. It is in the closet, though.
I have a Google Home Mini in my bathroom.
I know. I mean, I have two of these Facebook portals.
Okay, no, that's a step too far. But Sherilyn, do you have a mini or anything in your bathroom? I'm just curious.
Uh-oh, we lost her. She disappeared. She went to turn off all her Ring cameras.
It's like,
she literally, I guess when Robert ran out, she had a similar crisis. So my attitude on all this has really changed dramatically. For a long time, I was, I don't care. They can have video, whatever. But I'm starting to worry. There seems to be a widespread desire to collect every bit of information about everybody.
Well, there's that. And then once it's there, it's searchable forever to anybody.
And you raised a good point. If a company decided, if Tesla decided, we don't like Leo's coverage, they've got all sorts of stuff they could release about me.
I don't know what you're doing in your car. I don't want to know.
Nothing that Tesla knows about. Welcome back, Sherlyn. did you have a call? You don't have a app on your phone.
I was like, don't ask her if she went to the bathroom. Come on,
so,
man.
I got
to
ask Robert, though. As it was approaching 10, did you feel increased urgency?
Yeah.
Is it fairly, it's fairly accurate?
It's actually really accurate. I mean, it's...
So that was fast, though.
Well, I mean, because it was at 6, 5, 6, 7, and then Jammerby gave me a liter of water, and I drank the whole thing during the ad break. And that, that will spike it pretty quickly. Yeah.
I'm back.
And actually, there is another use of that, which is if you stay at like 4 to 6 for 5 or 6 hours,
you're dehydrated.
You're dehydrated. Yeah. You actually go need to go drink some water.
Well, I was thinking about using it for like if you're planning a road trip, you could like empty and then drink strategically along the way. So you didn't have to make
strategic drinking.
This could be a new e-sport.
Oh, that's true. That's another place where this could be. You know.
That's right. Actually, this could go on the status screen of every e-sport streamer.
Oh, see, that gets into that competitive information.
Lower corner. Exactly.
All right, let me do one more ad, and then when we come back, final words. Some. There's lots of little stories I'm going to rip through and talk about. But first, a word from IT Pro TV. We love IT Pro TV. They kind of were born on this network when Tim and Don started IT Pro TV. They were IT trainers, and they thought, you know, we should do kind of what Tech TV did, what Twit did, which is stream live IT training. People could watch wherever they are in the convenience of their own home, get on-demand stuff, and they could get a job in IT or get better skills in IT. IT Pro TV was born in a minute. It has grown like crazy. I was about a year ago, Lisa and I went out to the grand opening of their new Gainesville studios, 5 studios. They're now all recording live. You can watch them record live, join the chat room, and then, of course, they've got 4,000 hours now in their library, binge-worthy on-demand training for every area of IT, from CompTIA to Cisco, EC Council. They do those certified ethical hacker certs that I really would like to get. VMware. The hosts, people like Don and Ronnie Wong and Cherokee Booz, are fabulous. They present information in a talk show format. They're live every day. Content goes studio to web in 24 hours, so it's always fresh. And you can watch it on your browser, of course, and on your phone. They have iOS and Android apps, but also Chromecast it to your TV. Roku, they have a great Roku app, Amazon Fire TV app, an Apple TV app. So once you're getting in there, man, you could get up in the morning, could have IT Pro TV on while you eat breakfast, listen to it in the car on the way to work, have it running in a window, and you could get great skills that are going to get you a better job. This is the category right now for jobs is IT. Those IT skills are gold. 2019 is a perfect time for you to start a new career in IT or get the cert you've been missing or, you know what, just learn. It's fun. Visit go.itpro.tv/twit. That's go.itpro.tv/twit, and you can get started with IT Pro TV. They have a sale on that is remarkable. This is their biggest sale ever. Their video-only subscription, which is a standard membership, that's normally $57, currently on sale on the site at $29 a month, which I think is an amazing deal. But if you use the offer code TWIT30, you'll save an additional 30%. That means you can jumpstart your career or advance it for about $20 a month. That's so much, even in the study materials for those certs, let alone a class or a technical college. This is a great deal. And if you're the kind of person that gets this kind of information by watching it, there's just no better way. go.itpro.tv/twit. Don't forget, TWIT30 will give you 30% off. If you've been putting it off, there's no better time. I know you've heard of us talk about it. Now's the time. IT Pro TV, flexible training, binge-worthy content, and life-changing results. You're going to love it. Visit go.itpro.tv/twit and use the promo code TWIT30. Chromecast Audio is being discontinued. What is wrong with Google? They just turn stuff off at the drop of a hat.
Well, no, this is their lineage, because remember when they started, they were big on the spaghetti model. Throw everything up against the wall and see what sticks, which is great when you're a startup. Not so great when you've been around for, you know, more than a decade and most of the world depends on you.
I guess we knew this was happening because you could buy one for $15.
All right.
I think you still can if you shop around. And I don't see any reason not to get one.
No, they still work.
They still work. They're great for audio. They hook them up to a speaker. They have optical and analog in, or I mean out. They work on Wi-Fi, and they do, I think, really good audio. I think it's a great little product.
I mean, they've got someone at Google right now who's looking at the expansive
Ruth
service
Porat,
and
the new
product
CFO.
Line, right, yeah. And saying, this is stupid, guys. Yeah. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
They have the same problem that Apple had on the return of Jobs when he said, why do we have 67 lines? It doesn't make sense. We should have four.
Tim Cook says revenue for Apple's wearables is 50% higher than the iPod at its height.
Which is still way less than what it needs to be. When
but I don't get iPod. It. I mean, it's they say he said that this was the interview that he gave with CNBC. Is that Jim Cramer? Wow. I wonder if he brought his buy button.
You know, actually, I was watching Jim Cramer in the press room the other day.
Yeah.
And what scares me is he's saying a lot of the exact same things and making the exact same jokes that he did before the last crash.
Uh-oh.
And I know I'm kidding you not, because I'm sitting there and I'm like, wait a minute. He's making fun of the people who are scared of the market right now. It's like the last time he did this was when he was incredibly wrong and he lost his audience a lot of money.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. Okay.
By the way, can I suggest an app tweak for them?
Yeah,
if they were to integrate this with Google Maps, so that when
you knew
I'm
where
driving,
the bathroom was
when I'm driving, it would say, "Hey, yeah. You need this bathroom because you won't make it to the next one." That would be awesome. Please do that. Then I don't have to drive at 120 miles.
That's
an hour
way anymore. More than me doing strategic See? Planning on my end. It's AI.
My phone's saying, hey, you're probably going to want to stop at this Union 76 because that's the last clean bathroom, because Google Maps also rates bathrooms for the
Do they
next
really?
50 miles. Yeah. There's an integrated, there's a layer where they've rated bathrooms, publicly wow. accessible bathrooms.
Are you kidding?
I'm not.
That's amazeballs.
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
Amazon, due to Apple's drop in value, is now the most valuable company. Very first time, the most valuable company.
They leapfrogged
in
Microsoft.
The U.S. They leapfrogged Microsoft, Apple. I mean, it didn't take much. You only had to be $800 billion.
Yeah.
It's not a
Although half of that might be going somewhere else.
Yeah, that was bad timing because right after that, Jeff Bezos tweeted that he and Mackenzie, after 25 years of marriage, are getting divorced. Jeff has. Maybe not the best midlife crisis girlfriend ever. She's been releasing their texts.
Oops.
I don't know what to say about that. That's more celebrity gossip. Than
it is. It is because, okay, from what I didn't really pay attention to the story. But
no, I tried not
They were
to
on too. A break and
yep.
they were trying to patch things up. And obviously that didn't work out. And he's kind of owning it, and she's kind of owning it. And I'm thinking,
they're saying we're going to be friends. We would do it all over again.
Says,
they have kids.
It feels like the press really wants to, like, they really want to cover this. So they're trying, like, even like the Wall Street Journal's like, there's an ownership issue.
Well,
in
there
the
is.
Shares.
There's a financial
and there
story because she, by the way, she deserves
absolutely
half the company.
She was with him before Amazon.
That's right. And would helped considerably with the creation of Amazon. And so now that'll dilute Jeff's shares to down to, what, 9%? So that, I don't know.
I'm not crying of huge rivers there.
No.
So I feel like that is a legitimate story.
It
you
is.
Can report that. Yes. But I feel like a lot of the story is like, divorce. And,
I know.
Look how he controlled the story. He's sleeping with this woman. He sent dick pics.
And good on him
financial.
Or his PR person when he said, okay. Yes. Though this is something you can report on. It's public knowledge. It is. It's good for people to understand.
He
what's
wrote
going
a very,
on.
I thought, an eloquent and well said tweet. When did Twitter become the place people announce things? This is so depressing to me.
Well, he realizes he could be dragged over the coals, and either he controls the narrative or he lets someone.
That's
else
him. Yeah, controlling it, because otherwise someone would have picked it up in courts, then they would have said.
You saw it in our promo, pretty good story from Motherboard, revealing that AT&T, T-Mobile, and Sprint had all been kind of selling location data without a lot of protections, and it was getting out into the third-party market.
unauthorized.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Were people, was the lead story that people were driving blindfold for the Bird Box challenge? Well, I'm sorry. I just saw, I was like, no. Did I miss something there?
You scrolled past.
Driving blindfolded for the Bird Box challenge. Just don't, officials say.
That is hard hitting reporting.
I'm sorry.
First, what's wrong with kids today? First, they eat Tide Pods. Now they try to blindfold and drive. A teenager from Utah decided to cover her eyes and drive a pickup truck. The latest yet, police say, in another online craze. This feels like Film at 11. No, this feels like Channel 4 News. People. In another online craze, it seems to inspire reckless behavior.
I don't have Netflix in Italy, so what is Bird Box? I keep hearing this. It's a thing.
It's a Sandra Bullock movie. It's post-apocalyptic, and it's her and a couple of kids trying to escape to a safe zone. But if they look at something that triggers a bout of depression, they might commit, like, be driven to kill themselves, and that's the premise of the movie. I would just started watching actually a third of it before this interview.
So you don't know what happens.
So basically, this is about a bunch of people who are trying not to look at Twitter.
Sure.
Sweet. All right. I got it.
Does sound to me like The Quiet Place.
It is The Quiet Place.
Except instead of covering the ears.
So this is the Dark Place. Is the next
one going to be Don't Smell Anything? And they all walk around with clothespins on their nose. I don't know.
Don't touch anything.
That's actually close to life because you could have, gases, sarin or...
True. Don't breathe.
Leo, you just wrote Scary Movie 6 or 7.
The film has become a hit. More than 45 million Netflix subscribers watched it within the first week of its release.
Well, does that make it a hit or does that just mean, look, this is new. Let me click it.
Okay, here's the problem. Netflix revealed that last year it made 1,500 new movies and TV shows. 1,500. You'd have to watch four shows a day to keep up with what Netflix is cranking out.
I only watch their Adam Sandler stuff because that's high quality.
Basically, keeping up with Netflix is a part-time job. Crazy. In fact, this story, what was that story from? It had featured pictures of two of my favorite actors.
What short was this? Or what Netflix?
This was a Netflix.
Maniac. It's so good. You need to watch it.
I didn't know.
I don't have Netflix.
Who is that? Is that Seth Rogen? I confuse him with Zach Galifianakis.
Jonah Hill.
And Emma,
that's like skinny
Emma
Jonah
Stone.
Hill.
Skinny Jonah Hill, no beard, Emma Stone. And I didn't even know they did something on Netflix.
You know that new Hart and what's the guy from Breaking Bad? They have a new movie.
Bryan Cranston.
I actually thought that was like an Amazon or a Netflix original because the advertising in Italy was very vague about that. So I thought,
how do you say Netflix in Italian? Netflix.
No, don't joke. I met a couple of Italians, New Jersey Italians at CES, and they found out that I was living in Rome. And they go, you must love all the mozzarella. I'm like, the what?
Mozzarella.
So you get really fresh mozzarella. I'm like, You mean mozzarella?
That's
mozzarella is the Italian word. I'm like, no,
mozzarella.
It's not. Mozzarella is the Italian
word.
So
part of the reason that the Bird Box Challenge is big, besides the fact that YouTube exists, is that Jake Paul did it. Driving in and walking across a busy Los Angeles street while blindfolded.
Man.
What is wrong with people?
Why are people still paying attention to him?
The video has been removed for violating YouTube's policy that prohibits promoting dangerous activities.
Yeah. Like planking. Oh. You can't do planking on YouTube.
Please do not hurt yourself with the Bird Box Challenge. Actually, you'll see that when you watch Bird Box now.
I don't understand.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
No,
that
I'm glad you derailed
me.
Who cares?
No. Actually, AT&T tracking your location and the cell phone carriers selling your data is way more important
than a Bird Box. It's par for the course. I'd rather find out about the Bird Box Challenge. AT&T says, okay, we're going to stop sometime later this year. T-Mobile and Sprint said, yeah, we'll knock it off. Verizon apparently is not involved only because they got caught doing this earlier.
Right.
And stopped. So
I don't know what to
Isn't
say.
It funny that if Verizon got caught and stopped, that the other three waited until like now?
Right.
Well, this is the new thing.
It must have been very lucrative.
This is the Mark Zuckerberg way.
Yeah.
Wait until you get caught, then apologize, then do something else.
Is it the Zuck way or is it the Travis Kalanick
way? It's the tech way, the Silicon Valley way. It's the way, you know what? It's how Washington, D.C. is run. It's how everything, this country, the idea of integrity has gone down the tubes.
It's even before that. I mean, come on. How old is that saying it's easier to ask for forgiveness than for permission?
Yeah, but they've weaponized this. They've made it.
Well, and the carriers, to their credit, know that they've got the friendliest FCC commissioner since.
Now's the time.
Michael Copps.
If you're going to try stuff.
And I mean, no one's even talking about the fact that we're still using thousands of dirt boxes across the United States.
Opposite of that.
Easy to confuse. I don't want you to know about this, so pay no attention to the fact that there is now an ad blocker for podcasts. Adblockradio.com.
So it's just
you have to listen through silence? The podcast through that?
I don't know.
Yeah, what happens?
I don't know how it works. Weird. Oh, he's trying to get people to integrate it into their player. It works with radio.
Okay.
And he's got these strategies for detecting ads.
I'm pretty sure that's not going to work on ours.
No, because I weave the ads into the fabric of the show. So you don't know.
Well, that's old-timey TV when they used to actually have it in the show. Like Lucy would take out the bottle of
beans.
Okay,
that is current TV when Dell sponsors an entire detective. You're like, look, they're all on Dell.
They're all using Dells. Yeah. What was it? Was it Breaking Bad where they're all using Windows Phone well into the past the demise of the Windows Phone?
Oh, my gosh. Mindy Kaling's show, whatever that had it in there, too. And I was like,
Isn't that silly? Isn't that cute?
Microsoft Surface and the NFL.
Yeah.
And their biggest,
or as we call them, iPads.
That's right. Their biggest moment was when, what was it? It was one of the quarterbacks, I think the Jets, he snapped his in half because he got so frustrated.
And Belenikov, I think, threw his.
Yeah.
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 But that, you know, he throws whatever he can get. I think we can. Oh, hey, I didn't see this, but I gather at the VLC booth.
Yes.
At CES.
Love those hats.
They had a counter, which was kind of a funny counter because it's a bunch of tablets. And they hit 3 billion downloads at CES. I don't know if that's real or not because that's kind of coincidental timing. But still, who doesn't use VLC?
Me. Yeah, I mean, that VLC is the best. I mean, the best example of open source working well.
You know what we didn't talk about all through the show? What? Was there any VR at CES?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was an MR headset that was one of our best-offs.
Oh.
It was from a startup. It's called Nreal, and they basically did what the...
Those
sort of
look
like
kind of cool. That was augmented reality.
That was, I think it might be AR or XR, not full VR, but it looked a lot like the Willy Wonka glasses, I guess.
Yeah, they looked really cool. Yeah.
Yeah,
not so there at all nerdy.
That picture is a nice picture.
Oh, they don't look quite that nice.
And I was actually a fan of the display link technology. So their XR technology allows you to take any.
Oh, you're
any,
right. They're a little more nerdy
when make it completely wireless.
When you put Richard in them, they get a little bit more nerdy. Yeah.
Yeah, just a tad.
Yeah.
I can't really do 3D right now because I have a cataract in my right eye. So
I'm sorry.
It just makes me sick.
So this is augmented or X reality or augmented reality more than it is virtual reality, right?
Yeah.
Mm. I think the play with VR now is content. I think that the hardware is more or less we've sort of reached the stage where they're more or less going to be about where they are. There are still advances to be made, of course, but I don't think CES is the show they're going to bring it to anymore.
Yeah.
We're looking at content, so there'll be maybe Tribeca's VR arm of the film festival, as well as E3. We're going to see maybe new hardware as well as content for VR. So probably for the best that CES was a bit quiet on the VR front.
I think VR has gone the way of 3D TV myself, but we'll see. We shall see. Ladies and gentlemen, you guys are so good. I am so glad you were here. Stacey Higginbotham is the host of the IoT podcast with Kevin Toefel. Her website, stacyonIoT.com, is a must visit. And her newsletter, a must subscribe for anybody interested in IoT. And we are so graced by her presence every Wednesday on This Week in Google. Will you be back on Wednesday?
I will be.
We missed you because you were at CES. Look forward to it. Sherilyn Lowe, you catch her work at Engadget. She's reviews editor there, which is a big job if you think about it. So you're done with CES or do you have to file a few more stories?
I have filed my last story. It should be going up tomorrow. I'm really excited about this one too, so stay tuned. I'll tweet it out.
Good. And then, of course, it's the Bird Box Challenge for you.
can you file blindfolded?
Can you write
it in Engadget? I will go to bed blindfolded.
Good. There is a safe challenge.
There you go.
That's a safe one. Sherilyn, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Father Robert, he's back to 3 on the
Woo-hoo,
P level.
Look at that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Robert, I miss you so much. I'm so glad that you at least get a little bit of time to visit and went to CES and then came back and reported.
And like I said, anytime I come back, of course I'm going to try to make it up to the studio. That's my thing.
We miss you so much. He's the digital Jesuit. You're still tweeting, right?
I'm still tweeting, and actually that would be the best place to find what I'm going to be doing. The studio A is done.
So you said you were going to build a studio at the Vatican.
Right. So Studio A, which is where we're going to be doing most of the stand-ups, just the sort of the static shots, that's done. So I can start doing product reviews. Studio B, which is on the roof overlooking St. Peter's, that's going to be my streaming studio. That's probably going to take a couple more weeks to get done.
Yeah. What is this picture? This is cool.
No, that's from Brazil. That
Are
was
you in
Day.
This picture?
This no, I'm taking the picture.
Oh, this is when the Holy Father visited Brazil.
Yes, that's when we did the World Youth Day down. In fact, we're going to be doing that next week down in Panama. So you're going to see me traveling around a lot. Unfortunately,
is it fun? Are you having fun?
I mean, it's different. It's different work. I do miss what I used to do, but I mean, this is my vocation, and they've asked me to do it, so of course I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we found out no one could fill your shoes at know-how. We had to just kill the show because without Father Robert, there is no know-how.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, that happens a lot, right? I mean, yeah. Would we have a tech guy without you? People follow for the personalities. They
yeah.
Follow for the people.
I think that's always true about, especially the kinds of podcasts we do. It's as much about the people as it is about the content. Yeah, right. But please come back anytime.
Every chance
we always
I get,
love
Leo.
Having you. At Padre SJ on Twitter, PADRES.
Probably the next time I come by, there will be a more specific URL because Padre's Corner is officially coming back.
Oh, good.
I do have permission to do
really
that.
Really glad to hear that. That was always a fun show. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We do this show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC. We'd love it if you stop by. We had a great studio audience. Luis and Luisa were here. Michael. From Brisbane, Australia, Kyle and Michelle from Philly. Thank you all for coming. Did I get everybody? If you want to be in studio, we will love to host you. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. There's no charge. But you do have to be in the Petaluma, California area, about an hour north of San Francisco. Just email us and we'll put a seat out for you. You can also watch the show live on a live stream because at twit.tv/live we have both audio and video. And if you do that, the party is going on at irc.twit.tv, our chat room, where all the people watching live gather together to heckle me. Actually, today, to give me some of my best lines, and I thank you. I've been stealing your jokes pretty much throughout
they're
the show.
They're good people.
They're my writers.
Is that where they're coming from? You were definitely on your game this time.
No, thanks to the chat room, honestly. if you can't watch live or be here live, on-demand audio and video for everything we do, of course, it's a podcast. It's available for download either from our website, twit.tv, or find This Week in Tech in your favorite podcast program, and you could subscribe to it, and you'll get it the minute it's available a Sunday evening for your Monday morning commute. And we appreciate it if you subscribe. Don't forget, your voice assistant can also play episodes of all of our shows. Just say, hey, you, play This Week in Tech podcast, or This Week in Google podcast, or the Tech Guy podcast, and you'll get the most recent episode. And you can listen to our live stream that way, too. Play Twit Live, and that way you'll get the live stream. So that's another great way to listen. I think that more and more people are going to start listening that way. It's one of the reasons I like these voice assistants. It makes it very easy to listen to podcasts. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye. Yay.